Blog Talk Radio.
Parental guidance is suggested.
Hey, hey, welcome to Jeremy's View, episode number 9. Tonight, we're going to have a little bit different of a broadcast for you. I do like having guests on, and I do like sharing truthful stories. And tonight, I'm going to have a special co-host, and his name is Ross. And Ross, I've met Ross down at the People's Convoy, and we've talked numerous times, and he's been on my radio show before with numerous other subjects, and we're going to talk about our mutual friend Samuel Doolin tonight. Ross, how are you doing tonight, my friend?
I'm doing good, Jeremy. How's it going?
It's good, man. And, you know, Ross made a few social media posts this last week, and I seen him. I didn't contact Ross right away. He contacted me, and we talked on the phone, and I'm like, he's like, did you hear what happened, what's going on with Samuel? And I said, no, I have. I guess I read your Facebook post, but we're going to get into a story tonight about a guy by the name of Samuel Doolin that is an ex-Army Ranger that I met down in at the People's Convoy along with Ross. And Samuel has a really, I mean, this is a really deep in very, I don't know, how do I describe it? It's intense. There's so many ins and outs and so many different things that are going on. It's very hard to comprehend how deep this gets because there's a lot of things that are involved that involves his family, businesses that they own, his cousins, January 6th. There's a million different things that are involved in this story. And I, like I told Ross, I said, basically what I'm going to do tonight, I'm going just to be sitting back and letting you guys get this story out there because I think it's important that people's stories are heard because the mainstream media, as you all know, are just they're lying sacks of garbage. Samuel's dad is going to call in here shortly also. So we'll have Samuel's dad on, and he's going to explain part of what's going on too. So we're going to start this broadcast out with Ross. Basically, start from the beginning. Let's start with the People's Convoy and why Samuel is even at the People's Convoy. You know, and we'll start going into why they're looking for his cousin, and what's going on with the family. What happened with his other cousin today? The gun shop that they own. That the ATF went in and raided. You guys are not going to believe this story. It's insane. So Ross, why don't you take it from the very beginning? Let's start at the People's Convoy. Why did we all get involved, and why did Samuel get involved? And let's paint a picture of who Samuel, you know, really is and what kind of a person he is. So I'll let you start it off, Ross.
All right, yes, sir. yeah, I met Sam in South Carolina. You know, I started the Florida Convoy, and one of our first stops was in South Carolina in Charlotte at the Speedway there. And you know, I met Sam. You know, he had just been kicked out of the military. You know, a week and a half, 2 weeks prior to the convoy starting, for being vocal about not getting the vaccine. And, you know, I learned Sam was an Army Ranger, and, you know, he's a good old boy from Polk County, Florida, you know, same county that I grew up in. And so, we had a lot in common. You know, our families are very similar. You know, we come from very Christian families, you know, Southern Christian families. And, you know, we're just good old farm, you know, country boys, you know. And
hey, Ross,
yes,
if
sir.
You don't mind real quick. I apologize for interrupting to you and the audience, but when he said being vocal about the vaccine, he's talking about the COVID-19 vaccine. Samuel was kicked out of the military because he refused to get the COVID-19 vaccine, and he was an Army Ranger, ladies and gentlemen. And that's how I met him down at the People's Convoy when he was in his full fatigue Army Ranger uniform with a Bible strapped to his belt. I mean, this guy is the real deal. He's a good dude. And let me just throw an opinion out there or facts or whatever you want to call it. I know that the military have to get vaccines in order, you know, to be in the military. But this particular thing that they call the vaccine was an experimental gene therapy. That's proven. That's not misinformation, disinformation, or hearsay. That is proven that this was an experimental gene therapy, mRNA gene therapy. So I want to make that clear so you guys understand as we progress here why Samuel got involved with the People's Convoy and this and that. So, again, I apologize, Ross. Go ahead and continue. I apologize.
No, yeah, you're fine. I didn't really ask Sam to help out with the convoy at first, you know, until we got up to Hagerstown a couple of days later. And, I seen, how he handled himself, and I asked him to give me a hand in Hagerstown. And when we first got to Hagerstown, the Florida convoy was really the security of the convoy at the beginning. And so Sam, he didn't question anything. You know, when he wasn't doing security, he was in the kitchen serving everybody food. He probably slept 2 hours a day, and the rest of the time he was patrolling around, just looking out for after everybody, and trying to handle any situation that came up. And I never heard any complaints. And it was actually him and his brother Michael. They both helped out a lot during the Hagerstown, portion of the convoy. And Sam, a lot of people don't realize, he just, as soon as he got home from, Washington, from being kicked out of the military, he left and went to the convoy. So, everybody seen him in his fatigues every single day, because those are the only clothes that he had. That's why he had those clothes on. It wasn't really to draw attention to himself, because he's not that type of guy. It's just he was there. He wanted to be there. He didn't care about what he had with him. He just wanted to be there for everybody else. So as the convoy went on, we got pretty close. As friends. Since the convoy, I've got to know his family pretty good. Sam helped me out when we came back to Florida. We did a little tour around the state, and Sam was with me for a couple of those stops. And his family, they actually hosted us one night, held us, we got to stay there overnight, camp out on their property. We got there, they fed us and just treated us like we were family from day one. It's a really, really humble family. And, that's when I started finding out. I didn't really know about I knew some of the January 6th connection with him and his family in Hagerstown, but I found a lot more out when I met the rest of his family and found out what they've been going through since January 6th. And that's really, I think, where some of this might have started. I hope it doesn't have anything to do with the convoy. His couple of his cousins and his brother and his uncle, dad, they all went up to January 6th in a church group. And when they came back, 6 months later, they were raided by the FBI. The FBI came in with 75 agents and raided the farm. They live on a 40-acre farm with, I believe, four or five houses between all the different families that live on there. And, his uncle, the one that drove them up there to January 6th, the pastor, he's very involved in the community. The entire family is involved in the community. They're all really good people, really humble people. And what they went through that night that the FBI went through, FBI went there and raided the farm, was uncalled for. They were raided at 2 o'clock in the morning. Woken up by flashbangs, brought out of the house. Everybody is brought out of the houses at the same time, at gunpoint. We're talking, 2-3-year-old kids, little kids. Throughout the whole ranch were brought out, seeing tanks in their yard, three different tanks, 75 FBI agents in full gear. And, once they got everybody out at gunpoint, they decided to flashbang the inside of the houses and search. And it's all because they were looking for Sam's cousin Johnny. Sam's cousin Johnny right now is
his dad is his dad is actually on right now. So
yeah.
I'm going to have you continue, Ross, but I'm going to Frank, I'm going to bring you on. I'm going to put your mic on. Just so you know, you will be live on air. So we will get to you shortly, but I want to leave your mic on too, so you and Ross are mic'd up. So whenever you want to say something or jump in, you're more than welcome to, Frank. And by the way, thank you for joining the program tonight. Frank, you are live on air, and I'm going to have Ross continue on with his story, and then you jump in whenever you feel the need to jump in. Okay, Frank?
If you'll give me a second, one of the other people who's going to try to get on the show just called me, and if I could get out and get back in, I'll see if I can get him to join us, the uncle.
Oh, absolutely.
All right,
if you want to hang
up. I'll call back in.
That'd
be great. Yeah, that'd be great. This would be his story to tell, you know, his firsthand experience, what happened to him that night. Yeah, Ben's—he's a really good guy. There's a picture of him there January 6th that a lot of people have probably seen, and he's a pastor. He was on the bottom of the steps, wasn't even on the steps of the state capitol, praying for the police. He stayed back the entire time, was just praying for the police, and he had his hands up, and the Capitol Police decided to spray him in the face with pepper spray. A man that was just sitting back, praying for their well-being and their safety. And there's a clear view of the state police officer just spraying him right in the face. And he couldn't see anything after that. I know he went through a lot of stuff after being sprayed in the face there on January 6th. The family actually has a memorial for all the patriots that lost their lives that day on January 6th that nobody really has heard about. They actually went out of pocket and built this beautiful memorial for these people on their property right there in Lakeland, Florida. See if we can get some pictures for you later. Maybe you can put them up. But it's, the family is an amazing family that will drop everything, to help somebody else.
I know I've heard this story from Ben, where they came in and raided the farm. And my thing is Sheriff Grady Judd. Everybody loves the guy. Everybody's seen him on social media where he comes out, he does these press conferences where, he'll bring out his pictures and he makes fun of the people he arrests and, he makes it look like he's a big pro-gun sheriff. When in reality, all he had to do was knock on the door and they would have exited the house. They would have let them go inside and search everything in the house, but instead, they decided to choose violence over peace. And that's one thing is, everybody looks up to Grady Judd, and I hate to be on this other on the other side of the fight from him, but I keep learning more and more and more about this sheriff that he isn't what he's portrayed to be. A lot of people don't know that he's actually leading the state right now in red flag law gun confiscations. I don't know. Do you know who Grady Judd is, Jeremy?
Yes, I've seen him numerous times on different broadcasts going after criminals and pretty much portraying that he's pro-2A.
Right.
So, I don't have any firsthand knowledge of any of this, so I, of course, I've got to cover my own ass, so to speak, and say, listen, the people that you're going to listen to now is their stories and their thoughts and opinions, not necessarily mine. Ross knows where I sit on this stuff, and I'll share my opinion somewhat. I want you to understand something here, ladies and gentlemen. We're building up the story of what's going on with Samuel. What happened with his uncle, This and then of course the story is coming from Ross and the family themselves, and from Frank and his uncle that hopefully will call in with Frank. And I wanted them to come on and share their story from their perspective, from their point of view, and that's what this whole broadcast is about. But I know who Grady Judd is, yes, and I've always thought of him as being, yeah, like he's kind of like what's that sheriff Arapaho or whatever from Arizona. I always thought, oh wow, these guys are the real deal. This is what America needs. Well, things that I've been told as of late involving the ATF and the FBI and Sheriff Grady Judd kind of contradicts my beliefs or my opinions that I had on the guy. But I'm gonna save them for later. I want you guys to hear the story. I want you to have form your own opinion and your own thoughts based off of what you are about to hear. You know, we talked about, you know, the uncle and the dad and everybody going to J6, and they were there as a church group to pray for everybody, not just one group, or pray for, you know, they weren't just praying for Trump, or they weren't just praying for, you know, the people that were there. They were praying for the Capitol Police, like Trump asked to be respectful. So to set this story up, I want you to go into what happened J6 with his cousin Johnny that you know of. And this will kind of set a stage for what happened as far as why they went after the family the way they did. So let's go to that point of the story, if you don't mind, Ross, and then we'll kind of keep on moving toward Samuel, and hopefully Frank calls back in with the uncle.
Yes, hopefully they get on here, because hopefully I keep all the facts correct. You know, I just want to make it clear, this is my opinions. You know, I'm not a legal professional or anything like that. I'm not making any presumptions on any situations here. Just keep me out of the legal field for all this. I don't want to be held liable for anything I'm saying. So what I know happened is I know, they went with the church group. I'm not sure how many people went exactly, but I know Sam's brother went, Josh Doolin, his cousin Olivia Pollock, and Johnny Pollock. They all went January 6th in this church group, and I know they were holding their flags. They were, standing right there arm-to-arm together, and they watched different people get killed right in front of them. They watched, basically, in my opinion, would be a battle unfolding in front of them where it was fight or die. You know, Johnny watched his sister get hit by cops. He himself was getting hit by cops with his own flagpole. He was getting hit with, and eventually if you're getting hit so many times, when is it enough? How many times are you going to take law enforcement to hit you and see them kill people around you before you're going to fight back? You know, for me, it's not going to take that many times for me to get hit that I'm going to start fighting back. You know, if I was there, I'd probably be in the same situation Johnny is now, because I would have fought back for everybody else. You know, I've always been the type of person that, if somebody's getting bullied or, somebody can't stand up for themselves, I'm there. I will stand up for you. I will fight for you. And my entire childhood, it happened. And my entire life, that's what I've done. So from the different articles, if you look out there, it's insane that Fox News and WFLA, CNN, all there. You look into this family, and everyone's got a news article on them. And it doesn't make any sense.
I'm going to stop you again 1 second. The people that were killed that day at the Capitol, there was five. The Brian Sicknick was an officer, Capitol Police Force, and I'm not even going to get into that one tonight. I don't want to, because there's a whole controversy surrounding that, and I've read a lot about it, and I don't like it. But here's the other four. Ashley Babbitt, as you all know, and I'm not going to get into that either because there's a lot to go around about what was going on there and who was right there filming that. I do see Frank is back on here. I'll get to you here in a second. Frank, give me 2 seconds. Here's the people that I'm sure that Cousin Johnny seen getting killed. Kevin Greeson, he was 55 of Athens, Alabama. He was standing in a throng of fellow Trump loyalists, as this mainstream media calls it, this article, when he suffered a heart attack. Well, maybe he suffered a heart attack because he got flashbanged and pepper sprayed. I don't know that. I'm just going to just put that out there. Another one that was killed was Roseanne Boyland. You probably all seen that. They basically drug her body into the Capitol. Didn't give her CPR. I mean, it was really, in my opinion, my humble opinion, very, very horrible to watch. Another one was Benjamin Phillips. He was 50 years old. I don't know the story of Benjamin. Apparently, he died of a stroke in Washington. I don't know the circumstances around his death. But I'm sure the ones that Cousin Johnny seen was probably the Gleason fellow. I'm sorry, the Gleason. What the heck was his name again? I apologize. And Rosanna Boyland. I'm assuming that, by the way. So I just wanted to put that out there. And then before we get back to you here, Ross, let me just say I'm going to bring Frank back on live. Frank, you are back on live. Were you able to get a hold of the uncle?
Yep, he's supposed to have been called in. He might already be in. I don't know. He said he'd call in the second.
Problem. I'll keep your mic live, so just keep in mind that you are live, so any noises in the background, the audience will be able to hear. Ross. Go ahead, Frank.
I'm driving, so if you start hearing a noise, let me know so I can mute myself, okay?
Okay, yeah. If you want to mute yourself now, and if you want to jump in at any time, your mic is on, so just unmute yourself and jump in.
Well, I want to make a comment. You said you didn't want to get into the sick neck, and I won't either, but I will tell you from firsthand experience, because I was probably one of the last 5 people to walk out of that down Independence Boulevard that night of January 6th, okay? January 7th, on the way home, I Googled what was going on, and I was like, you got to be kidding me. But the first article from somewhere in Washington, D.C., was a newspaper article on Google that said that Mr. Sicknick went home from January 6th without injuries. There was nothing wrong with him. Early in the morning, he felt bad. He got up. He went to the hospital. And then they said he died. They said they kind of hinted that there was a heart attack. But the family said that they didn't want to make this political, that it had nothing to do with January 6th. Now, I saw that. I read it on January 7th. And for the next 3 months, I saw every news station repeat that story to where this day, if you talk to somebody, they still believe it's a real thing.
Oh, yeah. They said he was hit in the head with a fire extinguisher. He died of
right.
a brain aneurysm. I mean, there's a million different stories out there of what really happened to Brian Sicknick. And listen, no matter what happened to Brian Sicknick, it wasn't a result of – in that news article I was just reading – they said it was because he was beaten by the mob. And that is such a line of lies. It's not true. That is not true at all. I know that because I've read it. You have too.
Yeah, if you find the newspaper article, you know it's a lie. But my whole point was I was able to find that article on January 7th. Why did it take CNN and Fox and NBC and everybody else 3 months to find the same information out? And then, and of course, they don't put it out there because if you talk to somebody, you know, they blast 24/7 the story about what happened. And then when the truth comes out, well, they don't tell anybody, so they just believe the story, you know?
Right. And yeah. And then that's what mainstream media does. They go with a certain narrative and you're supposed to believe it. And by the way, we've got Uncle Ben on the phone here. So I'm going to throw the mic up and introduce him. Ben, you are on live on air.
All right, let me shut this tractor off. I'm out in the hayfield. I heard about
okay.
y'all. There we go. It's a lot quieter. God bless you. I hear you're standing up for some of the J6 stuff and pointing out some truth.
Well, we have to. I mean, the truth is the truth, and you know, that's the facts. And there's a narrative going around out there and has been for quite some time. And I refuse to bow down to that narrative just so everybody's feelings are you know, my feelings were hurt. Well, listen, the truth is meant to hurt your feelings because the truth is never pleasant usually. So
right.
in this case, it's truly not pleasant. So first of all, let me thank you for joining the broadcast tonight, Ben. And I understand it was your son, Johnny, that they're looking for. Is that correct?
Oh, yes, sir. And my daughter.
Yeah.
She really saved my life because we did a lot of prison ministry and all, and the women's prisons are worse than the men's. And I tell you what, if she hadn't done what she'd done, it would have just broke my heart. I don't know what. I'm not saying anything else. It's just I feel like she saved my life and my son's, because that would have just tore us up.
Let me just do this. Ross, since you're out baling hay, I don't want to keep you too long if we don't have to.
No, I talk all day on this subject because it's life and death to us. It's, you know, either we get America to wake up and come together. We don't have to kill anybody. We outnumber them so much. They lied so much about that election that all we got to do is just come together and stop. You know what I'm saying? If we just stopped on the side of the road one for 5 minutes a day, it would scare them to death and pray and lift their hands up and say, Lord, help this country. Because, we have a gift here, and we're throwing it away.
That's why the government doesn't like guys like me, or me personally, because I've been doing that for the last 5 years, and I've been promoting that for the last 5 years. And I've tried to organize protests, and I have, but they never turned out very big. The biggest one I think we did was, the People's Convoy was the biggest one that I was involved with, but I had to back out in the middle of it because there were certain things that the other organizers were doing that I wasn't comfortable with. Not saying that they did anything wrong, I just wasn't comfortable with it.
The second one
before that was D.C. in 2020. We held a protest on Constitution Avenue with over 200 trucks for 3 straight weeks while Trump was in office, and we never had any issues with the government, Secret Service, Capitol Police, Metro Police, Parks Police, nothing. It didn't. All this craziness did not start until Biden got into office, and that's when it seems like our federal government agencies have been weaponized against the American people, in my opinion.
That's absolutely true.
We can all see it. Most of us, I should say. But Ben, let me ask you, what happened with Johnny and your daughter? Ross was just going into it at the Capitol steps when Frank and you guys were there preaching and praying for the Capitol Police. What happened with your daughter and Johnny that the FBI is so adamant of coming after him?
Well, when we got split up, and I took a group to the restroom, and like they say, you couldn't move in the situation. Around the rally itself was just so packed, and they didn't, by choice, they didn't have the restroom facilities and things they needed for that many people. And it wasn't Trump's fault. You know what we're dealing with the mayor there, and Pelosi was, you know, over the Congress. So they were definitely out to set us up. And so they funneled everybody down after the rally. Pete Trump said peacefully go down to the Capitol and march and have your grievance against this stolen election.
Peacefully and patriotically.
Right, peacefully and patriotic. And man, it was so beautiful to see all those patriots there. As much horror as they've put me through in my family, I would do it all over again. And that sounds so crazy, but I love this country. And my kids, one thing I did that was, I raised them up to know history. And so they love this country, and they know what God's given us. And, you know, we're so unique that we have a constitution like we do. And so we're just torn, you know, knowing that they've stole election after election. I believe it's been going on for years, and they've been appointed people in the judicial system and in the court systems, you know, for such a day as this. They finally feel like they had enough in my heart. And so when we were there, it was just so patriotic, you know, so beautiful to see all those flags. And I don't know how many was there. I know we've been up there when there was 500,000 during Glenn Beck's thing that he did that one time and had so many show up, and that's what they – and this dwarfed that. This dwarfed – there was at least a million, to because it doubled the size and tripled it probably. So my estimate was 1.5 million, or, you know, more than 1 million. So they funneled all those people down like cattle to the Capitol, and then they got down there. It got tighter and tighter, and so then they were seeing blood and stuff on the ground. My children were. This was their testimony of what happened, and so as we got closer. Or they got closer. I was probably a mile or so behind them, and moving up that way. We could hear grenades going off. We could hear bombs. Now this is, I think it's right at about almost 2 o'clock, you know, because Trump deliberately, I heard, held back coming. He was late for, you know, the speech. And so when he let everybody out going to the Capitol, there was already some stuff going on in the front. But in the back, you know, nobody was really there. And so they funneled down, and their testimony was that they had, you know, some people before had moved some stuff, but they were just, everybody was just milling around by the Capitol. And then they started launching bombs and hitting them, you know. The park police started hitting on the people up close, and of course the people were agitated because of the bombs and things that they had done, you know, to the other, and they were shooting them with rubber bullets.
Those are the flashbangs that you're talking about.
Yeah, right. Got it. But they literally, I got a monument in behalf of Roseanne Borland and Ashley Babbitt and Bob Greeson and Mr. Phillips. I'm not sure which one Frank and I, you know, some of us saw die that night, that day, you know, but I believe it was either Greeson or Phillips. But one of them had a heart attack, and the other one died with a flashbang going off by his chest. And people just don't know that. They don't know that people, you know, four people died that day, not just Ashley Babbitt. Now, one of the greatest things I've got to do this year was have supper with Ashley's mom, Nikki, and then, you know, we got to pray. And that was just good, you know what I'm saying. It's just... one of the saddest things I thought that day was when I saw the other fellow, they were doing CPR on him, and I was thinking, I pray to God that this country doesn't take away what that man died for. There was so much built up in us that day when we were heading to the Capitol and seeing all the attacks on the American people needlessly. We were ready for Antifa. And we were ready for anybody attacking, you know, the American people, but we didn't think it would be our own government. And that's what, you know, I don't know if you ever seen the movie Blackheart or with Mel Gibson, Braveheart.
Braveheart,
you know, but
oh, yeah.
When he
numerous
takes,
times.
When he takes that helmet off of Robert the Bruce and he sees his, the one friend that could be making change for Scotland, and you see that heartbreak in his eyes. I mean, that was, you know, when they did that scene, it was what I felt in my heart over our country. And I know millions of others had the same thing.
Right, Ben?
Yes, sir. Yes, I'm not ordained, but I tell you what, God leads me, and His Spirit guides us, and His Spirit is trying to save America more than we want it saved. Now He's judging America. The judgment of God is, in the wrath of God is on this country. But He's trying to wake us up. Do you know the Proud Boys understand that more than these pastors out here today? Young pastors today don't even realize that God gave us this country. And if God gave it to us, how much more would He want us to keep it?
Ben, if you don't Ben and Frank and Ross and anybody listening, please, can you bow your heads for just a few seconds here? I do want to say a prayer from Proverbs 19:11 for blessing us to have this tonight, to having us on here to share your story. And here's Proverbs 19:11. The discretion of a man deferreth his anger, and it is his glory to pass over a transgression. I think this is a fitting Bible verse tonight for our conversation. And in Jesus' name I pray. Amen.
Yes.
Sorry to interrupt you, but you kind of got me with the moment there in talking about.
No, I'm the same way.
God is definitely here.
he is. And He's definitely trying to use men like you to spread the word out through this country to just come together. I had a dear buddy, and I'll get back to our story. I'd rather talk about other people's stories because they've given so much more. But Chris Worrell, I know him personally, and we were doing a Bible study on for the Christian Patriot Project for the families that were in the gulag. And I've fortunately got to pray with a lot of them, and I feel like they're on my own boys, you know, because my boy would be right there because they cannot stand that he's defied them and still out, and so they would love to parade him around in the gulag and torture him like they did those others. And Chris was in for 6 months, and when I first met him, he's the one that had cancer that they kept in and denied him medical treatment. And he was in for 6 months, and when he was on January 6th, it was benign, or what the, you know, he was still doing treatments, but it was in remission. That's the word they use. And so when they locked him up, that growth grew on his neck, and when I met him shortly after, because I was at some meetings with his wife and got to pray with her and pray for the situation there, and we were just begging God to get him out, and God answered our prayers there, and many others that were praying for him. And so when I first met him, I thought, well, maybe, you know, in my mind, I had a doubt that they might have just been using that as a way to get pity, you know, to kind of help get him out. But he had a growth on the side of his neck, almost half the size of a football. And they sit there week after week after week and watched that grow on that man's neck and denied him medical treatment and lied about it and kept his papers from reaching anybody that would help him. And then finally they got a lawyer that finally had a little bit of grit and got it before a judge and brought it. So that's what we're dealing with. We're dealing with people that do not care if they kill us or not. And that's the honest truth. I really feel like when they raided the house.
Either.
Absolutely. Well, that's the whole thing, because they have gained power by that crook and, you know, hook or whatever. You know, they're criminals. They're just flat-out criminals. So they could care less. They just do not want the American people to realize how much power they have if they come together. When we come together, like y'all were doing with the trucker rally and all, it was scaring them to death. They had to get in the middle. They had to put people in there to cause division and make sure y'all did not succeed in what you were doing, because y'all were succeeding. y'all were succeeding. It was giving people so much courage and so much hope. But I know what you're dealing with, because they will not let us get together. They will do anything to stop us from getting together.
I guarantee you know this, but during the original planning of the People's Convoy, I had death threats almost on a daily basis. They knew information about me that I forgot about. Like, they knew, they were tapping my phone. They were tapping everything about me. They knew everything about me. That was the federal government, and I'm convinced of that. I have no proof. Again, this is just my opinion, but I'm just telling you, there's no way anybody else could have done that. And some of the death threats I got, they were not pretty. I'm telling you right now, a normal person would have been scared to death. And I'm not going to say it didn't take me a little bit, but God willing, but I've got God on my side. And I told him I would not quit. Go ahead. Somebody wants to say something.
Sorry. Yeah, Jeremy, did you ever get a call from Capitol Police before you went to D.C.?
No, I did not.
No, see, before I even left Florida, I got a call from Capitol Police telling me that if we came up there to D.C. and entered D.C., that we were going to be arrested. As soon as we stepped foot inside D.C., they were going to impound our trucks. If anybody brought children with them, they were going to take their children away and put them into DCF custody. And they even threatened everyone's pets, that if you brought your pet inside your truck, it would go to the Humane Society, and you had 3 days before it would be euthanized.
Well, I know that they did that to Brian Brazzi and Mike Landis, and I think Brazzi mainly because he was kind of the spokesperson that kind of popped out at the end there. And I know he received a lot of threats too. And you know, a lot of crap has been talked about Brazzi, and I don't want to make this into the People's Convoy, but I just want to explain something that he dealt with a lot of stuff in the background that nobody has no idea about. I know some of it. Everybody that was involved did. And so before you are quick to criticize them, absolutely, before you're quick to criticize people like them and me and people like these folks here, you have no idea what we have all gone through to stand up for you and for your freedoms and for your rights. You have zero clue. And I have gone through nothing compared to the people on this phone tonight. I guarantee you that. And I just want you to understand that and keep that in the back of your mind while you continue to listen to this story unfold. We have about 2 hours and 15 minutes left of this broadcast. So just to keep that in mind, go ahead and continue on, Ben, with your story.
Oh, okay. No, I look at the truckers rally and January 6th as one and the same. They're the people are just need to come together and show them that we can unite and put a stop to this corruption, because if we don't, but on back to January 6th, I don't know where to really to start, because there's coming out so much. There's so many videos and things coming out where they were shooting the grenades. And I know there was some FBI and Antifa working together to make it look like they had an excuse to beat on the people, like we had started it. And so with that, when the Trump
Can you hear me?
I don't think
a lot of people know, just because the tapes have been taken from people and they don't have the videotapes, you know. This
Absolutely.
New Speaker of the House, if they would release, but of course the news media won't show it, but
when they release
the tapes, people don't understand that there is actually two sides of the Capitol and there's two different things going on. And so they think, most of the videos are just in the front of the Capitol. They don't really understand what was going on behind the Capitol.
We had video on the way home because we were all trying to put it together on our 17, you know, drive home back to Florida. We were trying to all put it together, and everybody was, because we just, it just blew us away. What happened? How could the park police attack us like that? And then we were listening. I was dialing like crazy trying to get a hold of Rush Limbaugh and put our narrative out there. And I was begging, why don't they interview somebody that was there? That was driving me crazy. Why wouldn't they interview? But none of the – Glenn Beck, Sean Hannity, you know, none of them were interviewing any patriot that was there and asking them what happened. And they were – it was like – I was so mad at Glenn Beck because he went on a year later – and was still giving Nancy Pelosi's narrative of the day. And I'm thinking, after all this time and all these testimonies and all these men that are locked up in the gulag with no due process, and just the crazy shows that had been going on that were true. And so we're heading down there, you know, we're going down to the Capitol because our president asked us to, and we wanted to because we were upset about a stolen election. But not to the point where we're going to attack the people. We were going down. When I got there, I got so mad because of the way they were treating the American people. I was ready to fight. I tell you, that was just my heart. And they got video of me. And why they didn't arrest me when they arrested my daughter and was trying to get my son. And I got video of me saying, you know, praying. You know, they got five of them in front of me praying pepper spray in my face. And I'm praying, Lord, they're putting a traitor into the Capitol. I said, Lord, open their eyes that they're putting a traitor into the Capitol. And when they were interviewing my friends, the FBI was interviewing some of my friends, they said, oh, we know Mr. Pollock was up there praying. In fact, he was even praying for the ones that were spraying him in the face. And they were making a joke about it. But I'd like to skip and go to the raid, but I'll go back to January when we and talking about the crowd right after that. Of course, I may get arrested now. I'm saying all this, but they still coming back arresting more, and we're kind of living on edge, thinking they're going to come any day, but. When my eyes cleared up, I heard two boys talking. Have you seen the view from the top? And I told them, I said, could you lead me up there? And I was blind as a bat. I could 45 minutes trying to get that stuff out of my eyes, or 30 minutes. And it had some water washing the pepper spray out of my eyes. And I said, I want to see it. And they said, no, sir, you've been through too much. And I said, no, I'm going to go see it. And so I finally got enough eyesight. I got up there, And that's where I saw Johnny and my daughter and others. I just started crying. And then I looked out there, and there was a sea of people. They had filled up the stands for where Biden was going to get inaugurated. And we had an inauguration for Trump. And it was just beautiful to see the people singing, and they were just so happy, even though they were being bombed at the, you know, the whole time we were there, they were being attacked, and yet they still filled up the stands. There was that much passion in our hearts. I really feel like everybody that was there, up there by the Capitol, was ready to die for their country. Now, they would have washed us into the sea of history of not knowing and caring. They would have made a narrative about us that we were just nuts. But the only thing we're nuts about is this country. And that we love it so much, and we thank God for it daily. We're one of the greatest nations in the world. We are the greatest nation in the world, but we've given it over to evil. And what I used to think, we're putting the Antichrist in power through the UN and through all these other giveaway programs and things. And we are putting the Antichrist in power. America is single-handedly putting the Antichrist in power. How can we not get pastors involved? You know, that's a question.
That's right.
How could we not see pastors just coming out of the woodwork, wanting to stand in the gap and say Joe Biden's a criminal and he deserves what criminals get for what he's done to us? I mean, he's not just a criminal; he's a traitor. They've got evidence, so much evidence on him, on taking bribes and things from other countries. He's admitted it himself. You know, straight out. And how could that get overlooked? But yet they call him our president.
Yeah, and I know we got to be careful, you know, what we say and everything too, because I don't want to get anybody in any trouble on this show either, you know. But I know from some of the things I've heard from you in the past, you know, I mean, when you saw your daughter and son, you know, they, you know, did they go in, or did they leave
in the same condition
that they went in?
Yeah, they were beat. I mean, one of the things about my son, he had he was carrying. We were all taking turns holding my flag that we brought. It was a burial flag, but he thought it was my dad's burial flag from Korea, and so dad had a military funeral, and that's another reason I'm so passionate. I don't know if you ever got to meet Uncle Bud, but he knew Uncle Jim, and his father-in-law was a veteran from World War II, and so we had like four veterans from just immediate family right away. But Bud had went to followed Patton through Germany, and then he went with my dad to Korea, and then he trained a group of boys when Vietnam started, and he told his mom, he said, I can't let them go by themselves. I can't let them go to that battlefield alone. And he went with them into Vietnam. Been through three major wars. And when I get to heaven, what am I going to tell him? Well, I was scared to speak out because they might come and arrest me again. I'm tired of being silent. I'm tired of Christians, and I'm being silent because they're scared. This is the last hour of this country. And if we don't put ourselves on the line and stand, we are doomed, and we deserve to lose our country. You know, because like I say, I've kept that what I've shared. This is the first time I've shared this in public about what I saw personally. When they came to the door to raid our house, They throwed flashbangs. They had three. I think ours was one of the most violent raids in America, as far as what I heard. They had three of those six-wheeled or the three-wheeled armored vehicles, the with the battering rams on the front. They had two in the back and then one in front of Johnny's little tiny house, and then drove through the cow pens and let the cows out and you know, just destroyed the place. And it was just so violent. They had my wife handicapped. She's had eight children, and all of them patriot. None of them. I told the police one time they were giving our son a hard time because he was pumping water out of a lake to work into a truck, and they, you know, it was legal. Everything was legal, but he just was cussing him. And I called the department. It was Haines City Police Department. I called them and I told them, I said, look, I said, is it your policy to demoralize young children? I said, because you'll never have a minute's trouble out of these kids. I said, you'll never have them come in their police station. Boy, was I wrong. Now our attorney general calls up Johnny on the anniversary of January 6th and said he's public criminal number one in the nation. You know, not Ashley Moody. This was the attorney general of the nation. That little skinny guy? He's a weasel.
Oh, Merrick Garland.
Yeah, Merrick Garland. He got up there on the January 6th of last year and said that Johnny Pollock was enemy number one to the country. You know, Johnny Pollock loves this country and would have gave his life to this country and still will. You know, I mean, just he still loves this country, even though they, you know, people have just turned their back on us. And by complacency, they're not involved. They don't have to get involved. You know, Frank's family, his children are in prison because of January 6th. And, you know, they're paying the price, like you said. And I appreciate what you said, you know, because we have been through hell. But it's worth it if we could save this country. Let me back up. I was at Judge Moore when they were throwing him, when they broke the law to throw the Ten Commandments out of the courtroom, out of the Alabama courtroom. That was a constitutional crisis that we should have come out of the woodwork to get, because since then our judicial system has went to hell. There is no justice. They're changing timestamps in these trials. They're changing videos. They're distorting videos. They're holding video back. They know the truth, and they will not let us speak. You go into a courtroom for January 6th, you're getting railroaded. And I sleep like a baby at night knowing my children are safe from them criminals. And, you know, if I had wronged you, if I'd done something to you, the Holy Spirit would drive me crazy to get it right. I cleared my conscience years ago. I went back and apologized to people that I had fought with and cussed and, you know, did mean things to. And the number one thing I did mean to people, I didn't tell them about the Lord Jesus Christ. And so that weighed hard on my conscience when I was out partying and doing those things. I went back and apologized to it. And like I say, if I was in sin right now by my children being raising up these children to love this country and being at January 6th, I would go back and apologize if I had done anything wrong or felt bad about anything that had happened. But used to, if there was a riot started, they would find out who started the fight. Am I right? That is a question. Because used to, like, if you had been out in the public and there was a brawl in, a bar or a public place, they would find out who threw the first punch. Who started the fight. Why will they not do that at January 6th? why will they not show all the tapes, like Frank was saying? Why will they not release the tapes and let us prove what we're saying? You know, interview us.
That's right. That's right. I met Sam and Mike up in Hagerstown. Well, I met them first in South Carolina and really got to know them in Hagerstown. And you know, I just like to say, you guys have raised some real men, real American men, you know, that love this country. And I'd stand next to you in a fight any day.
Amen. And they'd be honored to stand next to you. But we don't have to fight. We outnumber them so much. All we got to do is get on our face like Nineveh did and stop feeding them. Stop it.
Right.
You know, we don't have to kill them. All we got to do, we feed them. You know, we feed Nancy Pelosi all that ice cream. You know, if we just get together and stop for 3 days, it would drive them so crazy, they would come out trying to kill us. I had an AR-10 right by the door, and the Lord said if it was loaded and ready to go, I could have picked it up. There was hundreds of people in my, at least 100 at my house personally, and then they did some other raids at the same time with another friend of ours that went up. And so between the two raids and the command center and all, there was probably over 200 people involved with the law enforcement, our local law enforcement helping, and
was,
others.
That was just in Polk County?
That was just in Polk County. And that was, well, one of the raids was continued over to Michael Perkins. He was with us, and he's in the gulag, unfortunately, right now. His family was raided at the exact same time. It was a huge raid. They'd been following us for months, following us to church and back. And they said we were the most boring people they'd, you know, ever followed, because that's all we did was go to church and come, you know, and just have get-togethers, just good. They're just good people. The Perkins are great people.
Ben, let me, if you don't mind, I want to just say something. When you said they were following you back and forth to church, and they said that you're the most boring people, I know that we're probably having some listeners tonight that I ain't going to say that they're unwanted, but those of you that are listening that belong to agencies of this federal government, I want you to understand something tonight. Everything that is said here tonight is said by people from their heart and from their soul and from what they have experienced from agencies like yourself. If you do belong to the FBI or the ATF or the federal government in any way, and you're listening to this, guys like me and Ben and Frank and Ross and Johnny and Samuel and all of us, we don't want war. We don't want fight.
Absolutely.
You know what we want? We want peace, and we want everybody, Democrat, Republican, Independent, whatever party you may belong to. We just want to live our lives without any government interference. We don't need whatever you guys are doing in the background. We obviously know that you guys are all corrupt as hell. I mean, if anybody that does 2 minutes of research can figure that out. But as a human being, don't you just want to leave people alone? And at what time do you have enough integrity to stand up to somebody that is giving you unlawful and unconstitutional orders to harass a family or families? When do you say, okay, I have to face judgment day someday. I can't do this. When do you resign from your position, whatever position you may hold, and say, I'm not doing this anymore, because my country is way more important to me than what my boss says I'm getting paid for with my next paycheck? And so is your morality.
Amen.
You have a duty to God, and you have a duty to your fellow human beings to do the right thing. I'm begging you to stop this nonsense that you are being controlled. MK Ultra, I'm not going to get into that either, but I get it that a lot of people are mind controlled, and that's a proven fact. I've dug into it. But you can come out of this. I have. A lot of us have. And you can come out of this and do the right thing and do what's right by the people of this great nation and this world and stop this nonsense at any given point. That's all I'm asking you. I'm not even asking you at this point. I'm begging you. Just stop it, please.
Amen.
Let's go back.
Yes.
Let's go back to where we can all just live our lives peacefully and happily and do the things that we enjoy doing without interfering with other people's lives and what they're doing and what they enjoy doing. That's all I'm asking. But, Ben, I do have to move on because the time is ticking, and I only have 3 hours. I'm only allowed.
Okay.
Is there anything else that you would like to add to this, to what you were saying before I move on to Frank? Because I want to get to Sam's Samuel story
yes.
also.
No, we do. Yeah, we definitely need to get to Sam, but he's a dear brother, and I love him to death. So please help Frank and support him.
Hey, Ben.
Yes.
Can you hear me?
Yeah.
My phone cuts in and out when I'm in my car. So, I just wanted to say something real quick about Sam. I'm going to go into it. I don't really have we'll talk about Sam, but he just needs prayer more than anything, you know, for some of the stuff he's going through right now. I mean, we'll talk about some of the story and some of that, but he just really needs prayer and direction because he just, the boy really loves the Lord, and when he tells me about what the judge or prosecutor or the police are doing, he's like, he has no ill will. He'll tell me, I don't have any. Now, I might have ill will towards him because they're attacking my son, but he's like, they're just doing what they think's right. He goes, but unfortunately, they're not doing what they're supposed to, you know. My son set up a Give, Send, Go. I wanted to throw that in there. For Samuel Doolin, Second Amendment, but it's on Give, Send, Go, so, if somebody wants to throw $5 or $10 at it to get him help, he'd appreciate that. There's so much involved in this with so many people. You say you only got 3 hours. That doesn't even scratch the surface of so many things that have gone on here. Like I said, with some of the things Ben has talked about, he hasn't even told you just a little tiny piece of what's actually going on, you know?
Well, and listen, guys, I'm more than willing to do a part two to this. I'll set it up for another 3 hours. If you guys are willing, I'm willing.
Amen. No, I'm willing. I've been quiet for too long, and we've been to some rallies and things, and speaking out. But what I said tonight was the first time out. But when I was talking about that gun by the door, the Lord told me if I picked that gun up, there was somebody out there that was supposed to kill me. And my son has a gun shop, and we used to reload behind the house in an old part of the barn. And it had all got dilapidated. And when the kids were younger, we'd go to the range and pick up brass. We had thousands of rounds of brass and stuff. And I know if I'd have picked that gun up, they would have killed me like they did the guy with the hammer just recently and the other fella that went to the door with a pistol in his hand. They killed them instantly when they come to that door. Now, very few people know that, but that was the FBI that did those raids. I just know God's, spoke and spared me. And when I opened the door, the Lord told me, you got a big mouth, use it. And I there for a while I was going around to the anywhere I could, speak. And a lot of times I'd get to pray at the Proud Boys stuff just anywhere. The Lord just opened doors. My own church didn't understand what was going on. And they said, Ben, you're just a little too emotional right now. We don't need that. So the Lord opened up doors. And I told you about getting to pray with Nikki and Ashley's mom, and I got to meet Jim, the FBI friend, Mike Friend. Or I can't remember his first name, but his last name's Friend. But he was one that did like you were saying. He saw what the FBI was doing, and he resigned before those raids. because I got to talk to him personally, and say, I was thinking he might have went to our raid and resigned after that, but he because they marched our they threw grenades on my grandkids, and we got a picture of the three grandkids marching out of their marching around the house with all these SWAT team members guarding them. And my wife, I said, my wife and I were handcuffed for 6 hours. I saw that and I started screaming at them. I said, you bunch of Nazis. I said, you take down, that took trained real hard to take down these little babies. And I said, this is a proud day for America. Now that was on June 30th of 2021. That's been almost 2 years, you know, over 2 years ago. And
yeah,
it just seems.
I think I met you guys, I met you about April 2022, and that's the first time I heard y'all's story. Was when I came there with the convoy, and you guys hosted us overnight, you know, the goodness of your hearts, and fed us and had coffee for us. And first time I heard the story, I was just, you know, appalled by everything that you guys went through. And, you know, when we pulled up, I noticed they had one of those trailers with the cameras on it, and they had the radar. But, you know, didn't they have that set up there just to, you know, just have the cameras on y'all's entrance or something of your house? Like, is that's the level of, you know, surveillance they had you guys under?
Yeah, they constantly have a car or truck parked out, you know, surveillance. They spent millions on Frank's family and ours, and I think they spent millions on just my family personally. But can you imagine that doubled down across the whole, you know, how many thousands have they harassed and spent money, taxpayers' money, trying to harass the American people, intimidate them where they would never do this again? You know, they do not us together, and they do not want us to speak out about the corruption. They want us, you know, we're stealing the elections. Y'all sit down, shut up, and don't say anything, and just vote. You know, go and vote.
Well, we only have 30% of the country voting, and, you know, we need 100% of the country voting right now. We don't need only 30%. So I think it would be a lot better situation if everybody went out and voted.
Yes. Well, it doesn't matter because one of the big things I told the people, I said, I'm going to get my picture with Mike Lindell. And they made fun of Mike Lindell a lot, but he's dead on. If we do not get rid of the Dominion machines, we're doomed. Glenn Beck read the Dominion machine. He at the beginning of after the election, he read the manual for the Dominion machine on air. The machine was built to steal elections, and we're using the computer systems that they designed, that the CIA designed to steal elections.
Let me just jump in here, Ben.
We're just
stupid. I got to jump in here.
Yes.
And I just want to, I have to put this out there. Anything that is said on this radio show tonight is not necessarily the opinions or views of me, Ben, of Frank, of Ross, of the owner of this network, or blogtalkradio.com. Everybody has thoughts, and they have opinions, and some are facts, whether the public knows about it or not. And I just want to put that out as a disclaimer.
Yeah.
I have to, because I don't want to get the guy that owns this network that gives this to me to talk. I don't want to get him in trouble, and I don't want to get anybody else in trouble. So with that being said,
amen.
Whether I agree with you or not, that's up for debate. Not actually, it's not, but you keep on going on, my friend.
Okay. That's awesome. No, you research it. Is Joe Biden the most popular man on the planet? I don't think so, and that's what they're trying to force feed down our throat. He's a criminal.
No, actually, they're not. They're actually trying to force feed down our throat that Zelensky is the most popular man on the planet.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah, there you go. Yeah, that's
I don't
want to
get sidetracked here. That's a whole
right, no. But they're all tied in together. That's what I'm saying.
Oh,
everybody has been, since 2020, we've all been robbed. That's what I don't understand,
right.
Why the American people aren't ready and fed up. Why Rush Limbaugh, in the way, before 2020, you know, before January 6th, he thought, like, what is it going to take for the American people to be outraged? And
I've been asking that for 5 years with everything that I've been involved with, and I can give you the answer. The people will not wake up until it's too late, and that is a fact.
Yes.
There's a good majority of this population that know the truth, that understand the truth, that are ready to go at a moment's notice. But they all have the same thought that you and me and everybody else does. I'm just one person. I can't do it alone. When, in fact,
right.
if it just got started, there's a lot of people out here that are willing and ready to say, I've had enough, and you're not doing this anymore.
Do you guys
that's
remember,
a fact.
Excuse me. Do you guys remember when McCollum and Matar and some of the doctors during COVID came out and they were speaking about something called mass hypnosis, psychosis, where if you repeat something enough, after a while, no matter how many facts you give to people, they're not physically or psychologically able to believe it. And our media
that's
has
mass,
done such a good
mass formation psychosis. That was brought up. I can't remember by which doctor, but I was on a Zoom call with Dr. Robert Malone and numerous other, Dr. Ryan Cole, numerous other world-renowned doctors and scientists that had been censored and silenced by big tech. I was one of them that got censored and silenced, and I still do to this day. Every day I get a warning from one of the big tech companies that I either get banned or they give me a warning that I'm sharing misinformation or disinformation. And just for the listeners, when is the first time and the last time that you heard about misinformation and disinformation? That did not start until after COVID started. And again, I'm not trying to sidetrack this conversation, but I want you to understand that we've been being lied to for a very long time. They just come out right out, right
together.
In front of our faces. Yeah. It's mass formation psychosis. And there's other terms for it, technical and scientific terms, whatever you want to call it. I can't think right now because there's so much information going on in my head tonight that it's like blowing my mind, but it's awesome. But mass formation psychosis is the big one. And they talk about it. And what's the mainstream media do? They try to discredit it and call it misinformation. Oh, that's misinformation. There's no scientific evidence. Evidence? Is somebody that you're funding? That's not scientific evidence.
Well, they took it off Google. They took that search down from Google for a while. I called it mass hypnosis psychosis, but when that phrase came out, when you searched it, you didn't get anything for a while because they definitely didn't want people understanding.
Amen.
And I got one more something that just came to me. When you guys were talking a minute ago, the guy, the head of the CEO or the vice president of Dominion just recently has been caught on videotape saying that he's made sure that Trump's not going to win the next election. Now, I don't know if you're going to censor that or if they'll actually put it out like they did the other tapes when they brought. But there is one thing we can do. And you made a great point when you said this earlier that about what people can do, what they can't do, and the battle we're fighting is I have family members. I got 7 kids. Ben's got 8. But I still have some family members that are law enforcement and from different places, and some of them don't quite understand what's going on. I mean, they know the government's crooked. And even one of my
Hey, Frank, I don't mean to interrupt you. I apologize, but whatever mic you're using, can you talk into the mic or a little bit closer to the mic because we're having a hard time understanding you. But go ahead.
Yeah, my mic is terrible. That's why I said you have to tell me if it's not working good. But anyway, the point I want to make is I have family members that are pretty upset because their brothers are in trouble and we should have known the government was going to crush us. But the one thing that I see in each one of our lives is once we get involved in it, then it changes our whole point of view. I mean, if we weren't involved in January 6th the way we were, we wouldn't feel the way we do. So if we could just get people to do little things, make a call, read an article, show up for something, once people get involved in it, then they start to see it. And that's the hardest thing to do because, quite frankly, the government has more money and they're better at the game than we are. But I just believe through prayer that we could turn it around. I don't know any other way of doing it. You know what I mean?
Amen. Hey, after that, I was talking about Judge Moore and how the constitutional crisis was there. All I preached was judgment from God on this nation. I did not believe this nation was going to be saved. And I still kind of have my doubts because of how long it's taken. But at January 6th, it was like God showed me. I was hearing testimony of the Proud Boys, and they can't hardly say five words without three of them being an F. You know, they're just precious. But they're precious souls that love their country, and they see things that are going on, but they speak of God intervening in their families, and they speak of God having to change this country. It's incredible the revival that is going on in the common man, and that's why I don't understand why the churches won't get involved. Pastors, I challenge you, I beg you. I was going to a place with this, but it was on. I really feel like God's trying to save it more than we're saving it, trying to save it ourselves. We're giving our country away, and God's putting every kind of obstacle in our path to wake us up, you know, judgments. And so, you know, we need to get together and pray and seek his face. But one of the most precious things I get to tell the families of the January 6th people, you're heroes. You're not the scum of the earth like they want you to believe. You're not the troublemakers that, you know, you stood up, and I'm just so proud to be a part of that family. You know, we call it the J6 family. And they're being persecuted all over this country. It's not just our family. It's thousands of others. And I put a monument up for Ashley Babbitt, Bob Greeson, Roseanne Borland. My son was right there beside her when she died. And we got a monument up in Phillips. You know, those men and ladies died for this country. What are you doing for it? That's my question, and I'm going to shut up. But I love you, and I appreciate, you know, being able to get on and have time with these great people. You know, Ross and Frank are the salt of the earth, and I'm proud to know them. And I'm proud to meet you, too. I hope we get to do another segment with you sometime, but I sure appreciate you letting on us on your show.
I will make sure that happens, Ben. I promise you that. And if you have contact with Ashley Babbitt's mother, and if she wants to join us, she is by all means more than welcome to come on.
They're out in front. I think they took a recess, but they had they were out in front of the jail every night doing a broadcast, and I know she would do it because she's been speaking out everywhere she gets an opportunity. You know, she's not ashamed.
I would be honored to have her on. I've been watching. I've been following that when she got arrested. I've seen it all. I can't think of the Antifa member's name that was there taping her daughter's death, Ashley Babbitt's death. John
right.
Sullivan. There's his name.
Right.
And
yeah, Sullivan.
He sold his video to CNN and MSNBC, I believe, are the two. And if I was wrong on those two, I apologize. Don't take my word for it. You'll have to look it up. But he sold them for $81,000 before the riot was even over. And
right.
if you are not educated or you just continue to believe mainstream media, that's why it's important to listen to people like myself or anybody else that is like-minded. You will get the truth eventually.
Amen. Well, I'm just going to listen, and I really appreciate the time you've allowed me to have, and just share just a, like Frank said, just a small part of what's on our hearts. You know, I can't how much I know.
I appreciate you being on. Honestly, I you know, it's for you to come on and share your story, knowing that you know your son and your daughter are still fugitives from the law, according to D.C. Absolutely.
Yeah.
And I'm not going to say anything more about that, except for pray for them. I beg you to, because
yes,
they deserve your prayers. And let's just hope they stay safe, and hopefully we can get through this mess before the law finds them, because if they do find them, they are going to be treated worse than a Venezuelan prison camp. And that's not going to be a good time.
That's a fact. They have tortured them men and tortured them men. Can I say one more thing? Veterans Day of 2021, they went in and gassed them, left them on the floor. You know, there in the it's gotten a little better in the gulag since then, but at the beginning, that first couple of years, it was hell for those men. I mean, it's literally been hell for them and the families. It's just been, I'd cry every. We'd pray on Wednesday, and I cry with the families every come time to pray, and I think, Lord, how can I? You break my heart every time. Can I pray for the country right now?
We absolutely do, without a shadow of a doubt.
Okay, Lord Jesus, we just come before you. And thank you for this country. We thank you for what you've given us. And I thank you for those precious men that are in that prison, in that gulag, and in prisons all over this country for standing up for what they believe in, Lord. And they believe in this country. They believe in the Constitution. Lord, we're not evil people, Lord, for recognizing what you've given us, Lord. And we thank you for that. And we thank you so much for this opportunity to pray with the nation, Lord, and come together and thank you for the families, Lord. I just pray that your Holy Spirit would just fall on the families, Lord, and help them not to beat themselves up, Lord. Help them not to feel like they shouldn't have been there, their failures. And, Lord, I just pray that you would encourage them, Lord, to keep standing and keep fighting for this country, Lord. And those that are out there and they haven't done anything, Lord, that you would speak to their hearts, Lord, to stand, Lord, as Ross was telling them and Frank and the others, Lord, and our host, Lord, we just pray that you would just anoint this nation, Lord, and speak to our hearts, Lord. And, Father, if there's somebody out there that hadn't given their heart to the Lord Jesus Christ, I pray that they would realize that's the only way to you, Lord, is through the shed blood of Christ Jesus. And we love you and praise you, and we just give you all the honor and glory. Father, we pray that you would deliver us from this evil. Lord, we are fighting evil that we cannot come against. Lord, we're fighting with demons that are holding Satan's hand, Lord. And I just pray that you would just protect these families and protect these men. Lord, we've stirred up a hornet's nest, and, Father, we're in the middle of it, and we thank you for allowing us to be in it. But, Lord, we just pray that you'd wake up the pastors in this country, Lord. The judgment starts at the house of the Lord, and, Father, deliverance is going to start at the house of the Lord. Wake this country up. Wake the Christians up, Lord, to speak out and to stand firm, Lord, for what you've given us, Lord. We love you and praise you. In Jesus' name, amen.
Amen.
Oh, I love you, and I just appreciate you. Yeah, I just cannot believe God will not despise a broken and contrite heart, and he's broken so many people's hearts these last few years through this and through these raids, and so many homes have been destroyed, and it's time to change. you know, we can implement change if we just come together. All right.
Hey,
appreciate
Ben.
You. Love you.
Ben, I do have a caller that's calling in right now that wants to add their opinion or their thoughts.
Hang on. Okay.
Yep. Okay, so let me just add them in. Caller 8978, you are on air with Ben, Frank, and Ross.
I just calling in. I didn't realize I hit the button. I just called in to listen. How are you guys?
We're talking about families in J6 and what they've gone through, being raided by the FBI and ATF, and we haven't even gotten probably to the tip of the iceberg of this story yet. We're probably going to have to do a part two, maybe a three, and four, and 500. I don't know. I mean, it gets deeper and deeper and interesting, I tell you that.
Well, you know what? I wish they would investigate that the way it should be investigated, because if they did, you'd see a lot of Democrats in jail right now.
Absolutely.
And you'd probably see just a few of those rhinos in jail, too, because they were in on it, like Liz Cheney and Adam.
That's right.
Adam Kinzinger, and yeah.
Well,
out
of respect to rhinoceroses, I call them all Democrats. I mean,
don't insult the zoo animals.
I'm telling you.
No,
so, yeah, I was just calling in, man. I seen your ad on Twitter, and I thought, wow, this is going to be interesting. So I just woke up. I just wanted to get on here and do my part of listening to a great show. And I apologize. I didn't realize I hit the one to come on the air.
Actually, you hit 911, but the one hit first, I guess.
Oh. Well, it must have been important to get on here to listen.
Is that the FBI in the background I can hear buzzing in and out of my earpiece?
Yeah,
right.
Well, I think it's safe to say, out of all the people you know damn well that ain't me.
No, I know that's not you. I guarantee you that. But, no, we were just finishing up with Ben. We're going to get to his nephew's story, Samuel Doolin. Who you met down at the People's Convoy also. He was the gentleman dressed as dressed in his fatigues in an Army Ranger uniform with the Bible that was strapped to him.
I remember, Ben.
Yeah. So his dad is on here. Frank is with us. And we're going to continue on to tell what happened with Samuel. And he's been in jail for the last year, by the way. Just
for
so you know.
Four months since June. That's
Yeah. So, but I don't know. There's something wrong with your phone. You're like cutting way like real bad.
How about now?
I don't know. It's very distorted.
There it is.
There you go.
I was telling Samuel that is Sam on the line?
No, Samuel's in jail.
Unfortunately,
he's been in jail for a while now because he's being politically persecuted from, in my opinion, by the FBI and because of what happened at J6, even though he wasn't involved. But that's why we're doing an episode tonight.
I believe that with all my heart, too. I just told his dad that. Of course, we all knew it, too, but I believe that's exactly right.
And he made quite the impression, a fine young man.
He really is a good man. He's a peaceful, calm, cool, and collected man. He's a good dude.
Yes,
but,
he is. I can vouch for that.
Yeah,
if you were broke down on the side of the road, he's the one that would stop and help you. And that's
absolutely
a fact. He's done it for hundreds.
And the guy that's on the phone, Ben, this is Uncle Ben of Samuel. His dad, Frank, is on the phone here, too. But the guy that's on the phone was at the People's Convoy with me and Ross also. And I'm not going to divulge his name either because I want to protect his name. But, he knows who Sam is, and he's met Samuel. And so But Ben, before we continue on, I do want to tell you that I appreciate you coming on tonight and sharing your story and your thoughts and praying with the audience. And I do have your phone number. I probably will reach out to Ross first and have him contact you and share my phone number with you so you have my number.
Okay. Yes, sir.
And let's do a part two to this so we can get more deeper into everything that has happened and what's gone on with your family. So, but Ben, I want to continue on with this story, but thank you for joining us tonight. And, I promise you that we'll have at least one more part to this, if not multiple parts to this.
Okay. Awesome. No, that'll be awesome. Can I stay on and listen?
Yep, I'll shut your mic off and put you on the headphones so you can stay. You can stay on and listen.
That sounds. I'm away. All right. God bless you.
Continue. God bless you too, sir. Man, I pray for your son and your daughter. But I'll put your microphone off the headsets now. I promise you, I will. Have a great night.
Okay. Sounds good. Bye bye.
Okay. That was Ben. That was Ben Pollock. His son Johnny Pollock is, according to the AG number AG Merrick Garland, he is enemy number one to this nation. Reason being, I'm going to let Ross and Frank go into this part of the episode involving Samuel. So, Ross, if you want to continue on with your story, we have about an hour and 23 minutes left of this broadcast, and if we need to use every minute of that, we can, and I'll stop you at like 5 minutes before, and we'll do a part two next week if we have to or whatever it works for, you know, everybody else. So we got the basis of what happened at J6 with involving Ben Pollock's son, Johnny, and his daughter,
Olivia.
I don't think we really went into depth of what happened with Johnny, why he's enemy number one to our federal government. And I don't know. You can if you want to. It's up to you what happened, what transpired, involving the flagpoles and people dying in front of them and like they went into defense mode, basically. But I want to move on. I don't want to move quickly to Samuel, but I do want to get Samuel's story out here tonight because he's the one. We got two on the run right now that are fugitives from justice, quote unquote, and then we have one that's in jail, and then that's Samuel. And Samuel is probably the one that he really didn't do anything. He's just being politically persecuted to get at the two that are fugitives of justice, or according to the AG Merrick Garland. In my opinion. So, Ross, go ahead and continue on with the story. What happened with cousin Johnny that they flashbanged Uncle Ben's house and took them all out in the middle of the night, and then eventually Samuel was pulled over by the sheriff department, Grady Judd's sheriff's department in Lakeland, Florida, I believe. Why don't you go ahead and start with that story, and we got Frank on the line. So, Frank, if at any point you want to jump in, just unmute your phone and jump on in and clarify anything. So go ahead.
Yeah, definitely need help to make sure I keep all these opinions straight. So also want to throw in there Josh Doolin, Sam's brother. He's there January 6th. He's sitting up in D.C. right now. He was sentenced to 18 months back in August. Is that right, Frank? He just got sentenced in August?
Yeah. I can give you a little backstory on Josh if you want it. But essentially, the first, when he came, before everybody was raided, can you hear me all right? Can you hear me all right?
Yeah, I can hear you. Can you hear him,
Okay.
Jerry?
Yeah, just try to speak into your microphone as close as you can and as loud as you can, as clearly as you can, I should say.
Is this any better?
There you go.
Better?
That sounds good.
Okay.
Yep.
Yeah, we won't have time to go into a whole lot of it. But anyway, Josh, of course, we were all together, but we came back and everybody had different charges. And originally, Josh had, I don't know why some had more charges than the others, but Josh had two or three misdemeanor charges, okay? And so he was like, wow, really? So, you know, everybody, they wanted, you know, everything happened with the other, with Johnny, of course. You know, they told Johnny they're going to put him in jail for life. So, I mean, unless you lost your mind, why wouldn't you be gone? But Josh just had to miss him. He didn't think it was going to be that big of a deal. I mean, he knew it would be. But at his house, you know, like Ben's, they came in like the army, you know, like they were going after Osama bin Laden when they went to Ben's house. And it's something people need to know is, when they raided Mr. Pollock's house, they come in at 5:30 in the morning for a reason. And the reason is they don't want people to, they don't want CBS news reporters showing what they do. So by the time you see it on the news, it's daylight and everybody's in custody and they're talking nice and everything looks good, like they're being professional. They come in the dark for a reason. They don't want people to see how violent they are when they're going after little kids and women and children. With my son, he didn't get – he works at the fire department. He just got a new job at the fire department, newly married. He was doing great. And he loved his job. I mean, because COVID, there was no graduation for his fire ceremony, but – his wife told me he broke like two or three different records. He had a funny story where they had to pull somebody out of the burning building, the fake burning building, and the people in front of him messed up. I don't know why I'm telling you the story, but it's because it's funny. But the other guy messed up and left somebody in there, and they only had so much time, and he was running out of time. So he grabbed the guy who was supposed to get out and felt along the wall and threw him on his shoulder and ran and hit the wall and busted out a board in the window and fell out just in time. And the police chief, the guy in charge of it, goes, well, we've never seen that, but, you know, you made it in time. But he's just a good kid. He's energetic, like Ben's kids, you know. When Olivia did her YouTube, it was so sweet. You know, they didn't want people to see that. They don't want people to see who they are. Anybody that knows Ben's daughter, Olivia, you know, if she had to go before a jury trial and got a fair trial, there's no way they'd convict her of anything. Or Johnny. You know, these kids, they're a lot nicer than I was at this age, okay? They do mission trips. They work hard. They like to play. They get along. They help people. They're just good people. And the FBI... and the government knows that. And I think one of the FBI agents even told somebody, yeah, we know you're good people, but we've got orders that we have to get you. And it's really sad. I know I got off track a little bit. Joshua, he told
me. No, they need to hear this.
Well, if you can go on YouTube, Olivia's story is really good. I recommend it. All of them. They're just good people. And some of the police officers, I think, actually felt a little bit of shame, which it's hard to believe, but they're hired off-duty officers in some of those raids. But with my son Joshua, they just told him to work the double shift, and when he woke, they woke him up for a second shift at the fire department, and when he walked outside, they handcuffed him. And they raided his house, and, you know, just like they didn't do the flashbang grenades, but they came in. He's standing in the front yard because he knew they were coming. He's standing out there. And again, here's the thing that disturbs me about what happens with these agents is they lie. Like, something happened to Sam and one of the officers lied. And I'm like, well, you know, why do you need to lie about it? You know, they're not bad people. Why do you need – and they lie to cover up for a mistake they make. It can still look good, but they don't realize the consequences that lie has on the person they're arresting. You know, with Joshua, he had a couple of misdemeanors, but then they waited a year because he was going to go ahead and go to trial, as I understood it, and they didn't like that, and they wanted everybody to make a plea deal, and he decided to do a trial,
So with him and Mr. Perkins, which is another story of another great guy that was there, they decided to add, you know, felony disturbing the peace, or felony disrupting Congress, whatever. But those weren't original charges, and those were new laws. I think that, I don't know if they're something that Trump did about the statue, but because they wouldn't play ball or they wanted to defend themselves for what they did and have their day in court, they punish them. There's additional punishment, and you're right. And consequently, he ended up going to federal prison. He's in a federal prison for a year and a half away from his wife and baby over trespassing. And technically and legally, I was there. You got to have a sign or a barricade to have trespassing. And I understand that at the beginning of January 6th, there was bicycle racks, and that's what they called it, was the area. But I promise you, you couldn't make, if you had to go in front of a real jury, you couldn't make that stick for beans. So they're persecuting all these people for these trespassing charges, and it's just totally made up and ridiculous, but they're ruining people's lives. And you guys know that. You saw it's your trucker rally. My boys went to that rally, and I was following you guys. I was following what was going on in Canada. I was about to pull my hair out. I'm like, every time somebody gets together and tries to do something, they get, you know, outmanned by the government. But what you were doing, you got people involved, and they got their own families involved. So every time somebody does one of these rallies or get-togethers or prayer vigils, Ben's got a really good story he'll tell you later about getting to meet with Trump on just a fluke of something they went down to pray about. So there's all kind of really good stories coming out of this, and people are really learning a lot, but it's a shame that, like I said, my son's a felon now. I got two of them that are going to be felons probably. And the other guy, Mr. Perkins, and when they raided his house, he lived in a trailer, they beat the cameras off the house. They just come in treating people like they're dangerous, and they know they're not. I don't really understand that, but
didn't Josh save a police officer's life on January 6th?
Yeah, when I finally got down there, I had a gimp leg, so that probably saved me a lot of grief. In hindsight, I'd gone over to the bathroom, and then when I headed down, it came out the bathroom. Everybody was like boogieing on down, and so I'm looking for everybody. Like Ben said, everybody was fractured and split up. So when I walked into the back, so we're at the back of the Capitol, where the bleachers were for the Biden inauguration, that's where everybody was on the back of the building. They'll play this. For 3 years, they played a video of somebody breaking a window, and I was standing there, and I yelled at that guy, and everybody yelled at the guy that broke. They broke two or three windows the whole day, probably just bad players. But when that guy broke that window, the second time he hit it, everybody started yelling. The crowd grabbed him and threw him on the ground, and he was done because they weren't there to destroy the Capitol like they tried to convince, or like they did convince everybody on that. What they did is they took about 20 minutes of chaos, and I'll tell you, because I said this in the beginning, I didn't pass anybody except two police officers walking the opposite direction. I was one of the last people to walk down Independence Boulevard on January 6th. Ben and the rest of them, I said I had a bum leg. I told them to go ahead. So they were about half a mile ahead of me. And there was virtually hardly anybody left when we left. So, and we weren't there terrorizing anybody. People, you know, when things settled down a little, people were praying, they were singing, it was patriotic. They're not going to show you those videos. They're not going to show you that. We were there almost all day long. And what you saw on TV was the first 20 minutes when people walked up to the police officers, because I talked to a guy that had a black eye, and I said, how'd you get that black eye? He said, I walked up to the barricades, I was talking to police officers, and I said, we want to go up there. He said, this is what this guy told me. It's just a side story, but He had no reason to lie. And he said they kept, you know, shooting these pepper bombs out and yelled at everybody, over at me. And he goes, "You're not coming in here." He said, and he reached over and he hit me with that one of those batons. He said, and it, those things hurt. And I told him, I said, "You better not do that again." He said, and he reached over and he punched me and he sprayed me with tear gas. And he said, that's when I grabbed the guy and I just pushed him over to the side. But those are the things that happened. The cops were aggravated. People were up. You know, so what happened is a bunch of people were up the line and they started spraying them with that tear gas, that gas that makes your eyes burn. And you know, there was pushing and shoving going on, but that was all over in 15 minutes, maybe 20. And I told somebody, I told my son's lawyer in Washington, D.C., he said, "Oh, you don't know how bad it was." I said, "Yes, I do." I said,
for the family, when it comes to law enforcement right now, there's just a bad taste in everybody's mouth from what everybody's been going through.
Well, they tried to portray these people as very violent. And I told him, I said, I've seen four scrimmages at a high school football game. Okay, now I'm not talking about Ashley Babbitt, and I'm not talking about Roseanne Borland where they beat him to death. I'm talking about out there where everybody walked up on the bleachers. They showed everybody a 15-minute clip from 100 different angles. They kept just replaying it. Because there was 8 or 9 hours of video where people were just walking around talking, taking pictures, and singing. So they distorted the view that people think. And, of course, that's become the narrative. They believe what they saw. You know, they thought for 5-6 hours it was just beating and pushing and shoving and kicking and hollering, and that's just not true.
Right. Now I'm going to go ahead and go into what Sam went through on December 8th, 2022 at, I think it was 6:30 in the morning. Where he pulled out of the farm and y'all's in the farm truck, right?
Yeah, I wasn't there. He's an old pickup truck they use at the farm, and he had a tag on it. He had a triangle on it, and I wasn't there, but according to what I've heard, he went to turn the corner, and there was at the stop sign, there was a trooper across the road from him, and the trooper turned on right, and then Sam's light turned, and he went left. Well, the trooper was in front of him, and the trooper slowed down.
Right, and now the trooper saying that he wasn't in front of him, in the trooper's statement on the case files, he's saying that he came up behind Sam. And that's how he saw the triangle and the no tag on the truck.
Yeah, and Sam cross-examined him in the courtroom, and he got some of that straightened out. But so, yeah, anyway, they pulled Sam over, and the guy went up there and told him to open up, and Sam was like, "You got to tell me why you're stopping me before I open the door." He goes, I don't know what's going on. And he said, "The guy just got really, like I said, I didn't." He got upset with Sam. He went around and opened the door of his girlfriend's side. But
yeah, so it's an old 80 Chevy. I believe 80 Chevy 1500. The windows wouldn't roll down, but they had the butterfly window in the front, the little vent window. Which, in another statement, the only one sheriff out of I think six in their statement said that they had their hands out those windows. And now the trooper is stating that Sam shook his head no, when actually he was talking, him and his fiance, Tiffany, they were talking through the window where they could pass everything they needed through, they could talk through everything, and the trooper didn't like that, and he opened the door up.
Well, he went around and opened the side, But the trooper, like in the courtroom when Sam was trying to be his own defense, he asked that trooper, and all the other cops said yes. They could hear Sam fine, and he had his hands out. And so the only conflicting story was the trooper. And that's why I said, I don't know why you would have to lie, but the The problem was the trooper called for backup and said that Sam said that he had guns in his car to protect him from, to use against them or, protect, you know, some derogatory statement, which Sam never made. And then that escalated into five or six deputies coming out, trying to beat on the windows and tasing them, and he's getting mad because he had a plexiglass window. They got mad because they couldn't beat it in. It was kind of funny. But when they tased him, he didn't resist arrest at all. He just said, why are you doing this? You know, and it's just a big mess. But
yeah, and Sam the entire time is trying to de-escalate the situation with the trooper. You know, before the trooper even goes back to his car, you know, he's trying to de-escalate it and just talk to the guy, you know, just like regular human beings, you know, respect each other. And, you know, the trooper opens the door, and, you know, from the video that Sam put out, he said the trooper kind of looked down, you know, basically started searching the truck with the door open as he was talking to Sam. And that's when he started asking for the VIN for the truck, and the trooper went around and, you know, got the VIN from the windshield, and he actually had the farm truck statute right there next to the VIN, and they, you know, they put that in the statement, but they never, you know, I don't believe he actually ever went and looked into the statute to see, you know, if it was legal for, you know, for him to be driving it with the triangle and all that, you know, and in my opinion, this is just a simple, you know, no registration type of deal, but for some reason the trooper wanted to escalate the situation to where it ended up how it ended. And
well,
when
the trooper said he had guns to use against them, it was over. You know, red flag,
yeah.
Bells, whistles, people with guns, and that's what I was talking about. Somebody lies, they don't know, you know, what they're doing to somebody, and consequently, you know, boiled it all down, Sam's facing some really serious years in jail. And when he's tried to defend himself, he wouldn't take some kind of a shot when he was in the jail, so they moved him to another jail. And he only gets out of his cell 2.5-3 hours a day. He can't look up his own paperwork, can't do anything to defend himself, so he's pretty much defenseless when he has to go back to court, you know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah, and then so Sam, when he got arrested, you guys got him bonded out. From what I understand, there was another charge when he got bonded out. Sheriff Grady Judd threw another charge on top of him, trying to keep him in jail in December. You guys had to bond him on that charge too.
Yeah, that was really weird. I don't remember how that went, but I'm sure they broke a whole bunch of rules. Whatever they did, you know, they put him before a judge and. Yeah, Sam could explain it better, but yeah. So the next day they had to bring him back again, and they stuck another charge on him, but they were already supposed to have let him go, and it was just a big mess. And he was doing the best he could to try to defend himself, but they didn't want to hear it.
Yeah, so Sam, from you know, I was talking to him at this point. I talked to him up until June. And I know he was representing himself pro se. He was doing a pretty good job at it for not being, you know, somebody that studied the law and, you know, went to law school. And he, I believe, you know, he allegedly, you know, the charges they brought on him were, let me pull it up real fast. I know he is facing 2 machine gun charges. And here it is. I'll pull it up. Possession of a short-barreled rifle. Possession of a machine gun, altering or removing a serial number on a gun, resisting without violence, and carrying a concealed firearm is what led from the traffic stop. And Sam was doing a pretty good job at fighting that, you know, up until June, where they came out. Where was Sam at when they came after him for a suspended license?
He had gone to court. On one of the, you know, he defended himself. He had a hearing. I don't know if he was trying to get a motion to suppress that day, but anyway, he went to a court hearing to defend himself. And after the court hearing, he went over to eat. You know, I think it was with Ben and Tom, actually, at Sonny's. And they ate. And then Sam was walking back over to the courthouse to get a DVD of you know, like a written transcript, except you get the audio of the trial that day. I told him always to get them so he'd go back and get one. And as he was walking back from Sonny's, two unmarked police cars came up and they had three sheriff's deputies, or two sheriff's deputies and one who's the sheriff's deputy and the liaison for the FBI, who's questioned Ben and his boy and everybody else. So he's part of the FBI team also. Ironically.
Right, which reminds me, I want to backtrack a little bit. I missed something here. So when Sam was pulled over and he was arrested, once he was arrested, they took him to a substation right there in Lakeland, Florida, North Lakeland.
Yes,
and put
yes,
him in an interrogation room with the FBI liaison. And the first question he is asked is, where is Johnny?
Yes, that's what I heard.
That's why, you know, a lot of this, you know, before all this, that's why I was trying to build it up a little bit to show everybody the harassment this family's going through. And now, just because of Sam being related to them, you know, this could be a setup. It could not be. It just could be a weird situation, might be. But it's a little funny to me that they go through all this to get Sam arrested. And they take him right to this guy, and the first thing they're asking him is, where is your cousin?
I don't know if you know this or not, but when Sam was in Ranger School out in Washington State, after they raided Ben and his family at gunpoint in the dark of the night and put lasers on them, they showed up at, what's his name? Anyway, they showed up at this huge military base in Washington State, about as far as you can get from here, to question Samuel about January 6th.
Oh, no, I didn't know about that.
Yeah, no, they had the FBI showed up and they started asking questions. And according to, as I talked to Sam about it, he's like, well, it lasted for about 45 minutes. He said, they asked me about Johnny, and I said, why do you want Johnny? And they told him, and he said, well, why do you have Johnny? He's armed and dangerous. And I said, well, because his gun's missing out of his bedroom. He said, well, how do you know that he's got it? And you could get him killed by having him marked as armed and dangerous. He said, what's wrong with you people? And he started questioning them. And then he started asking about January 6th and the stuff that happened, and started questioning their patriotism and if they believe in the Constitution. And then he started, you know, quoting the Bible and some Bible verses about being an honorable man and doing the right thing. And then he said, finally, they're like, no, we're done with you. So I'm like, no, we're not done. We need to talk. He goes, you guys need to hear this. He said, so finally, after about 45 minutes, they were ready to leave. They didn't want to talk to him anymore because he was bringing into question the fact that he's like, you don't have the, what do you have the authority to come out here and question me? You're the ones that are doing wrong. You guys don't have any honor. If you're, you know, and he brought up the election and just all the things that he knew about what had happened in January. And they got pretty frustrated with him. Well, after they left, he wasn't done. He started calling our local sheriff. And he started calling the liaison. And he started calling the FBI. To the point where the FBI called out the commander of the base and said, if you don't tell this guy to leave us alone, we're going to turn up the heat and try to get him kicked out of the army or something. Because Sam was so upset at what they were doing to the January 6th people, especially his cousin, and they're treating him like he knew his cousin. He knew he was a great kid. He knew he didn't do anything wrong. And the fact that he told me, he said, I told them if they will drop those charges of armed and dangerous, he said, I'll find Johnny. And they said, do you know where Johnny is? He said, I have no idea.
Well, we didn't lose you, did we?
I'm not
Jeremy,
sure.
Jeremy, you still have him on there? Okay.
I'm looking right now. Hold on one second here.
Yeah, I know. Sam did mention a little bit about that to me, about how he had talked
to
him in the past.
Dropped.
I didn't know all the – okay, he should call back in. I know. He did tell me some details about how he did. He was trying to get in contact with everybody and figure out what was going on. Because, again, this family is a humble Christian family that would do anything for anybody in the community, and they have. And now if we go into June, you know, when they came and picked Sam up, you know, I know they ended up taking him to jail. You know, he finally met with an attorney, and when that attorney left, he's back now. Okay, all right.
Okay, you're back on, Frank.
Okay, so I was just going back towards when he got arrested in June for that suspended license. I know they took him into jail. He got to meet with his attorney. And then didn't they slap another charge on top of him or on him again at that point?
No. He didn't have an attorney when he went to jail. He was still representing himself. And what happened is, of course, once they rearrested him on driving on a suspended license, right? Did you get to that point? Yeah.
That's what I was just explaining. Yes, sir.
The three agents. Well, Sam told me, I said, what happened? He said, well, they came up and they said they're going to arrest you on a suspended license. He goes, what do you think? He said, well, what are you doing here, Radabom? He said, well, we're here to arrest you. And Sam goes, well, this is suspicious. He goes, I'm going to record you guys. And according to Sam, he said, I took out my phone. I started recording. He goes, and one of the deputies tackled me and knocked my phone out of my hand, and they arrested me, and they charged me with a resisting arrest and bribed me about a suspended license. And I'm like, wow, that's a dirty trick. I mean, and they did it on purpose, you know. Just shut him up, teach him a lesson, you know, whatever it was. I don't know what it was, but it worked. Like I said, they're smarter than us, got more money. And I asked him, I said, would you want me to have an attorney come in? He said, no, Dad. He goes, if the court system's honest, they're going to look at this and say, no, I wasn't driving, and no, I didn't resist. And he goes, if the system's honest, he goes, I'll be delivered, and I won't, you know, double up these charges and let me out. Well, he didn't know the system, so when he went there, he went to talk to him, like, no, this is a first appearance. The only thing you can say is this or this. They pretty much didn't let him talk. And they took him off to jail. And then, because he was arrested, they took his bond away. Because he reoffended, they lost his bond, and he cannot get out of jail now. Ironically, I called a lawyer, and I said, why don't you go talk to Sam about what happened? The lawyer went in and talked to Sam. 5 minutes after the lawyer left, coincidentally, they came in and charged him with a third charge, which is a third trial, and it's a felony for practicing law without a license because he turned in his girlfriend's paperwork. So I'm like, yeah, they're trying to keep you in jail. And so that's where that was.
Yeah, so, you know, just like when he got arrested in December, they tried to keep him in jail once he got bonded out. That didn't work. You know, and he's going through representing himself. They figure out another way to throw him in jail. He's walking down the road on a suspended driver's license, charging him with another charge. So now he's been sitting in jail since June, about the middle of June or so?
Yeah.
Middle of June with And then, the hepatitis, he wouldn't take the hepatitis vaccine or something like that, right?
Right, yeah.
So they put him into solitary confinement. And then from what I'm hearing is that his there's an incident between now and then that his cell door was accidentally unlocked. And there were some guys that came in and ended up roughing him up. Is that right?
Yeah, he's had a couple of run-ins. He's got them straightened out. But, yeah, he had a couple of – and he said the guy's in there. And so this – to Sam's character, when Sam gets money on his commissary, He shares his peanuts and the little cakes he makes when he has money, because they don't have anything. They don't have any money, and they don't have any family to send them to him, so he tries to share it and witness with him. But the first couple he had were, they were just thugs. So he bought a bunch of stuff one time. They were trying to steal it. But he took care of himself. The Lord took care of him. But
right, right, and from what I understand is, you know, there's still there was a couple incidents of when he had a trial, and some paperwork got mixed up somewhere where he couldn't show up. Where they sent him a paperwork for trial. And
yeah, we lost
it, went
Frank
somewhere
again.
Else. We lost him again. Okay.
Yeah.
So I got you. So I know there was an incident that there was a mock trial or something that was put up, and Sam was supposed to be there. They end up sending the paperwork to some other address that Sam had never used in the past, just to make it where Sam wouldn't show up and be there. When Sam was showing up in court representing himself, he was showing up in his Class A's. He's showing up in his Class A's, showing everybody that, he's a former Army Ranger. He's an honorable man. And I think
right.
that's one of the big things in this, is they don't want him showing up like that for his trials, to show the jury who he actually is. They rather have him in handcuffs and an orange jumpsuit looking like a convict rather than looking like a man that would fight for his country and die for his country.
Yeah, well, that's part of the
Frank's
problem.
Back on.
Part
of the problem is our legal system has become, and, all of them aren't bad. All these cops, some of them are doing what they're told, and they can't think. They don't think right. They're just trying to get through life, whatever. But we've got a legal system that's set up in such a way that everybody that goes to jail is considered guilty, number one. And they passed, I had a lawyer tell me, he said, some of the worst laws we have were passed by the conservatives because the judges weren't harsh enough, or some bad guy got out and killed somebody, so they want a new law. He said then somebody like your son or some other kid that's done something wrong once or twice, and they get hit with one of these new laws that have a minimum sentence of 5 or 10 years, and they're like, he said, people are like, you got to be kidding me. He said, well, that's our legal system now, because prosecutors, they don't care who you are, what race, what religion, they want to look good politically, and they're going to get their pound of flesh, and that's kind of the system we're in. I mean, we have, I think Grady Judd has been a great sheriff, but I think he's become very political, and I think he's lost a lot of some of his focus,
No, I agree. He's let it all go to his head.
Sam doesn't have any animosity towards these people, and he just wants to help people. I told somebody the other day, I said, I got two kids, and I said, I don't talk good about my kids. If somebody said my kid did something wrong, I'm like, yeah, let's go talk to him. But as long as I've known him, I've never seen him start a fight, give anybody any kind of major trouble. They love the Lord. I don't know if you told early about Sam, but there's a little guy named Sparky, right? So Sam tells me one day, this is a side story, I said, what are you doing? He goes, I've got to take a guy home. I said, why? He goes, well, I got in a wreck with him. I said, what do you mean you got in a wreck? He said, well, he was going too fast and he hit me. I said, he messed up your truck? He said, yeah, my bumper's bent a little bit. He goes, but his car is really messed up. He said, so I'm going to tow him home. I said, you call the police? He said, no, I don't need to call the police. We're okay. So he tows the little guy home, right? And then I find out next week he's fixing the little guy's car because he ain't got no money. And then I meet the guy, and my wife tells me that she knew him when he was younger, and he was a really nice guy, but he got this bad car wreck with him and his friend, and, his left hand's crooked, his left and right hands are kind of crippled. He walks and kind of drags one foot, and he kind of talk good. He could talk good, but the wreck messed him up terribly. So he's handicapped beyond, you know, just he's pretty messed up. If you see him, you know, he looks funny. You know what I mean? And he talks funny.
Yeah.
So Sam fixes his truck, and then every Sunday, Sam goes and picks him up, takes him to church, and buys him lunch. I mean,
I mean that story right there. What else do you need to hear about Sam? I mean, that should tell you everything you need to know, you know, about him.
There's a lot of things about Sam that you know, that I could tell you about too. Just my first impressions of him. But gentlemen, I just want to mention that we are down to 44 minutes, and
yeah.
I do want to give an opportunity for our any of our listeners, if they want to call in and ask questions or have an opinion or thoughts. I can share the guest call-in number. You can call in as long as you remain respectful. If you call in here and start cussing and doing stuff like that, you're going to be immediately muted. Tonight's show is about trying to share a story of what's going on in this country. And if you have a genuine question or thought on this matter, please call in and share your thoughts. You don't have to agree with everything by any means. Just keep it respectful. Ask questions. That's good. But that guest call-in number, if you're listening, is 516-387-1733. And once you start hearing us through your headset or your phone, just press that number one. That lets my switchboard know that you want to come on and you have something to a question to ask or share a thought or an opinion. And again, you have to. I'm going to require that you keep it civil and respectful. And again, that guest call-in number is 516-387-1733. And I do see that we have a caller already, just in those few seconds. So let me bring on that caller, 8896. I'm going to bring you on air now. Again, please keep it respectful. 8896, you are live on air. What would you like to add to this conversation?
Hi, my name is Tom Osborne. How are you doing, Frank?
Hey, bud.
Hey, Tom, how's it going?
Pretty good. How are you?
Good,
I was busy at work, but I was listening, trying to call in. I don't know if I missed anything. But
no,
something
Ben,
that I
Ben's,
did. What was
Ben
that?
Was, Ben's on here, too.
Okay.
I said Ben's on here. He was talking earlier, but go ahead.
Yeah,
Okay.
Ben was on here also, caller, and we got 42 minutes left of this broadcast. We've been going for about 2 hours, just over 2 hours and 15 minutes. So you missed quite a bit if you just started listening, which is okay. You can go back and re-listen to it. So
I started listening right when Ben was praying.
Oh, okay.
Okay.
Go ahead. What would you like to add?
I don't know. I didn't hear it mentioned, but when Sam was arrested the second time for driving on a suspended license, those were charges that he was going to court for, so that they haven't even said that he was guilty of that. Like the charges that were going to take his license away, he hadn't even been found guilty. So how did they actually take his license away without being guilty of a crime first? We're innocent until proven guilty. So until his court case is over, how did they even take his license away? And I think that's why they've dropped it since.
Yeah,
no,
I'm not sure.
Point.
I think what it was is they did that intentionally. That way they'd have a reason to arrest him. But they knew that it wasn't going to actually fly in court. So they used this as their reason to come put hands on you, be violent with you, threaten you, take away your freedom, and then drop it when they knew right from the get-go that they weren't going to be able to do that.
Yeah, I'm not sure. I never did get clarity on it. Now, it might have been that he didn't renew his license. I never got an answer on that, so I have my suspicions which way it is, but I can't say one way or the other. I know which one it was, you know what I mean? But I do
right.
know that when they arrested him the second time, he lost his bond, and that all chance of getting out was over.
Yes.
And so he can't defend himself.
He had a valid driver's license the first time he was arrested, and the only way he would lose his driver's license were charges stemming from that first arrest, which he hasn't been pronounced guilty for yet. Still to this day.
Correct.
So are they doing any of this?
Yeah, and again, I believe the whole second arrest was just a way to get him back in jail. You know, they didn't want him out. You know, they didn't want him out making more videos on YouTube. They didn't, you know, they didn't want him representing himself. You know, he's gone through. He's on the fourth prosecutor now. They brought in a special prosecutor now to come after him because the other three, you know, they couldn't hack it.
Well, yeah, I mean, you have right now. You have a state trooper who has a conflicting story from the Polk County Sheriff's deputy. And some of the evidence that they wrote down and signed their names to isn't there because it never was there, which is making it very
right.
difficult for them to actually prosecute this case. But then
right,
for
right.
me, it makes it very interesting.
Well, they said
oh,
that
ahead,
there was
Russ.
A sheet. There was a sheet covering these guns in the truck, but there's no sheet that was put into evidence.
Right, and the trooper never said that. The
right.
first one on the scene, he never said that. The one initiating the stop, he didn't see that. So it
no,
just shows
sheriff,
that you have
sheriff.
A line
okay.
enforcement line. So that's been interesting. And for me, 3 years ago, I was very, very pro-law enforcement, and I still am pro the idea of law enforcement. But since then, since January 6th and seeing what's happened to the Pollocks and the Doolins and just the terrible nasty things that the government's capable of, I started researching into our history as America and all the nasty things that the government's done, not just January 6th. You look all the way back to the Bonus Army where Congress actually sent active duty military after veterans that just wanted a bonus that the politicians were playing around saying, well, we'll give you this bonus if you went to war. You actually fought for us. Then say, oh, well, we changed our mind. So they go up there, they're camping out, and our government actually sends active military here on American soil to attack our veterans. Start thinking about this stuff. Is everybody familiar with USC 242?
I've looked into it a little bit.
Okay. So you can look this stuff up. You can Google it. USC 242, it makes it a crime for any of our public servants to violate our constitutionally protected rights. Yet you see them doing this all the time. Your gun rights. You have the ability to keep and carry firearms. Well, they tell you have to have a permit. Well, that's an infringement. That's whoever in public service made that law, enforces that law, the judge who convicts somebody on that law, they're all breaking 242. And here in Polk County, I've talked to two deputies, and they read it, and they're like, well, I see it. I see that it's on the DOJ's website, but that's not going to fly around here. So they took their personal oath to uphold this Constitution. And some of them are prior military, too, so they took the oath twice. People that died for that Constitution. And here they are just violating. They don't even know that this stuff exists. They don't know Article 6, Section 2. They don't know any of it. Most of them aren't even trained. And I feel like that's a fault on the leadership. And here in Polk County, that's Grady Judd. But when you look at what he did to Sam, if you go back, you go to Sam's YouTube sites, you will see that the story that he put out to the media and the story that's on the Florida Highway Patrol's camera are two separate stories. So now I'm left to think, if he lied about Sam, like he did, it's there, it's proven, you can see it, then how do I know any of the criminals that they put away here are actually what they said they were? And that's really scary to think about because they can just say anything about anybody and put them in jail then.
That's right, and if you start proving, you know, that correct, you know, that they have been lying, that's going to be a lot of work for the state attorney and everyone to go back and look through all these cases, and that'd be a lot of people getting out of jail that this guy has put in there.
Yes, it's unfortunate because I want to believe in the idea of law enforcement that they're here to help us. But I feel like they're not anymore. I don't think that those people are actually here to help us. Maybe in rare occasions, but for the most part, they're prosecuting crimes that don't even have a victim. They're just foot soldiers for the state.
Oh, that's right. That's right. Yeah, I mean, with this traffic stop with Sam, you know, who's the victim? Who is the victim in this other than Sam?
Right, there wasn't.
You know, they said, no, there wasn't. And, you know, the video that Grady Judd put out, the press release that he put out, I mean, he had no evidence to back up anything he was saying. You know, he goes and tries to say that Sam, you know, he's got screws loose and this and that, but, you know, where's the mental evaluation backing up those statements, Grady Judd? You've ruined somebody's life. I hope he's listening. You've ruined somebody's life, and there's going to be a day that, you know, that everyone comes after you, you know, for a defamation suit or whatever, you know, politically, if that's what needs to happen. But Grady Judd's position as the sheriff in Polk County needs to change. He is not who he used to be. He's not the man that Polk County needs in that office. We need somebody else there.
Yes. You look at the release that he did on Sam. He said that Sam told us, quote unquote, Sam told us that he has sovereign citizen ideology, and he's kind of sort of sovereign. But then Sam posted on his YouTube through a Freedom of Information Act the recording inside of the Florida State Trooper's car where the deputy was talking to him, and that was never said. So if you actually look up the definition of sovereign citizen, Grady Judd was calling Sam a domestic terrorist. What the FBI considers, the federal government considers a domestic terrorist, when Sam never said that. And that was a blatant lie. They just don't care, though.
No, they had one agenda that day. That's to get Sam in jail, put pressure on him so he can give them information that he doesn't know.
Yes.
I mean, if I was in Johnny's position, you know, or Olivia's position right now, nobody would know where I'm at, not even my family.
Yeah.
And that's the case in this is nobody knows where they're at but them.
Right.
You know, so stop going after the family. You know, I believe what Johnny's mom was harassed just a few days ago by the FBI. Is that correct?
As far as I know, they showed up and said that they wanted to talk to Ben, but they were bringing some stuff back finally that they had taken, but they didn't bring everything back. But at the time, Ben was sick, so they said, oh, well, we'll come back. But as far as I'm concerned, they're not even an actual legitimate law enforcement agency to begin with. Because if you look Article 6, Section 2, all power not given to the federal government by the states is reserved to the states. They don't have arresting power. Even in your Florida law, you look it up, they can't extradite somebody. They can't arrest somebody inside the state of Florida without seeing the crime happen. So basically a citizen's arrest. But if they had somebody that they wanted, they'd have to go through your local sheriff's department. And to me, it's crazy because Grady says that he's here to uphold the Constitution. That's his first thing that he swears an oath to. But then he comes in and he has the FBI working with them hand in hand. So the FBI can come in and do whatever they want with his approval, and I don't even think he sometimes knows. They just do it.
Yeah, well,
do whatever they want.
I mean,
to
it's like with the ATF and Sam's cousin. You know, they have been going after Rapture Guns and Knives in North Lakeland over and over again as much as they can, just putting as much pressure on them. You know, really trying to take the gun store license away. You know,
I'm sure that's what they'd like to do.
Right, and he was going to be on here tonight, but he's busy with the ATF. They decided to come in and start inspecting the store yesterday. So he's busy going through you know, all their all their paperwork and everything that they're pushing him through and submitting everything to them, because his livelihood is still at stake because of January 6th and his family's associations.
Right. And ATF, I mean, you're talking about an agency within the government that is primarily focused at infringing on a constitutionally protected right. That is in complete violation of 242. The whole entire agency. But the only reason they get to continue to do what they do is because they have a monopoly on violence. People are afraid because they will come, they will kill you, they will hurt you, they will ruin your life, and they have enough money to buy all the equipment to make sure it happens. And there's nothing you're going to do to stop them.
Yeah, well, Jeremy, we in the convoy, you know, we stopped the mandates, the unconstitutional mandates from becoming law. You know, this is my message to everyone in the convoy. When are we going to stop the unconstitutional gun laws and everything else that our government is doing that's unconstitutional? When are we going to stop it? We rose up and stopped those mandates from ruining our lives. When are we going to do that again? Where is everybody at right now?
Right.
How long is it going to take, and how many people are going to have to be unconstitutionally arrested or held without their constitutional rights? You have the constitutional right to speedy trial and due process, and it's not happening in this country anymore. J6 defendants are proof of that. Samuel Doolin is proof of that. What you're seeing right now, only if half of this stuff happened in a third world country, according to like involving the J6 defendants, we would be at the UN right now saying we need a resolution immediately. Where the hell is our resolution? Why is this allowed to continue going on in America, the land of a constitutional republic, ladies and gentlemen, and we're allowing it to go on? You know why? Because half of the population listens to the mainstream media and is brainwashed, and again, we'll use the whole term that we used earlier this evening on this broadcast, mass formation psychosis. It's happening right in front of you, ladies and gentlemen. Whether you're a Democrat, a Republican, independent, doesn't matter what political party you associate yourself with. Just know that if this is happening to one side and you're allowing it and you're cheering it on, eventually the tables will turn. It'll happen to you. And you're gonna hope to hell that we're still around to have your back and to fight for you, because this will happen. And people like us, we believe in that Constitution wholeheartedly. And there's one thing that we will always do, and that is we will always defend that Constitution and what it stands for. I don't care who you voted for in the last election or who you plan on voting for the next election. If you are held unconstitutionally, like the J6 defendants have been, and politically persecuted like they have been, you best believe that there is a very large number of us in this country that are just sitting back in the weeds right now, and we're waiting for our right time for us to pop out and say, okay, enough's enough. Even though I think that time has passed, in my opinion, this has gone on long enough. All of this has. The fact that people are getting sentenced to prison for a year and a half for three misdemeanors. So what are you saying? Next time I get three misdemeanors for a speeding ticket, a traffic violation, and jaywalking, I'm going to go to prison for a year and a half? Or I stepped on the courthouse's grass, I'm going to go to prison? Now, don't you remember, we pay taxes, and all of our taxes go to fund that government in Washington, D.C. The Capitol is the people's house. Now, listen, they were in session. Do I think that they should go in and disrupt session? Absolutely not. That's an official government business, and it should remain sacred. I understand that. However, you're starting to prosecute people that were just on that property, not inside the building, but on the property. And they were being assaulted by Capitol Police officers that were taking orders from the Gestapo, in my opinion, that were unconstitutional. And they have the right under our Constitution to defend themselves when they are being assaulted. Now, you may
not only that, if
me,
those people had...
Go ahead.
If those people had like, just completely tried to run away, do you know how many people would have died? There was nowhere for anybody that was being pepper sprayed or flash banged or tear gassed to even go.
And that's the thing, though. If you know all the information, even without all of the J6 tapes have not been released yet. Mike Johnson's been a Speaker of the House now for, what, a week or two? That should have been, I mean, day one. Completely transparent, this is what happened. That tells me right there that he's in on it, too. And he may not be, and I apologize if he is not. However, we all know the facts of the matter is that Nancy Pelosi, Donald Trump had requested National Guard troops down there. Nancy Pelosi declined that request. Nancy Pelosi also had a film crew down there. There's multiple pictures of her son-in-law and her daughter right with the J6 defendants. The fact that John Sullivan was there from Antifa, who has close Antifa connections and BLM connections, was in the Capitol right next to Ashley Babbitt when she was murdered, and I'll say it again, murdered by the Capitol Police. And if you don't like that opinion or that thought, I don't care. That's exactly what happened to that poor woman. And the fact that John Sullivan was there with a video camera recording all of this and then selling that video footage to CNN and MSNBC, and again, I don't know, I can't remember if that's the two that he sold it to, so if I misrepresented somebody, I didn't mean to, but he sold it to two media sources for $81,000, I believe. The fact that he was there and he sold that... Tell everybody everything you need to know. There's no need for anything that happened that day. The way they corralled them to the Capitol, and then they put it on Donald Trump. Oh, he told them to go to the Capitol. He did. He said, we are going to go peacefully and patriotically and get our voices heard at the Capitol. He never said, you go in and break windows. He never said, you're going to go in and interrupt official government proceedings, ever. I've watched all of it a million times, trust me. And if I sound a little upset right now, it's because I am. I've been kind of laying back in the weeds just listening to the stories tonight. I've been waiting for the opportunity to let out my true emotions. And as you can tell, my normal emotions are F this and F that, but I'm going to keep it respectful tonight out of respect for everybody that's on the phone and was on the phone. What we're seeing here is an injustice in this country and a complete violation of many people's constitutional rights, ladies and gentlemen. And if you continue to listen to the mainstream media and allow the mainstream media to manipulate your feelings and your mind, we are only going to get worse from here on out. We have a small, very small window of opportunity to set history straight right now with this broadcast, and I urge you all to please jump on our side and say, okay, you're right, Jeremy, enough's enough. I've heard everything tonight, and we need to step up and say, you know what, to our politicians, you guys have gained way too much power. Our forefathers never meant for you to have this much power, and what you're doing now is Gestapo shit. Excuse my language, but it is Gestapo stuff. This is stuff that happened prior to World War II and during World War II until the Smith-Mundt Act was put into place as far as media goes. The Smith-Mundt Act was when they limited what was shared by state propaganda through our media sources. That was rescinded, and I'm sorry to get off a subject, but this is important to this conversation. That was rescinded under the Defense Act in 2011, and went into effect in 2012 under Obama. And by the way, the Defense Act was one of the most bipartisan bills ever passed in our legislation. But inserted there was the Smith-Mundt Modernization Act, which basically rescinded the Smith-Mundt Act and allowed for state-run propaganda through our media sources. And since 2011 and 2012, and long before that, but since 11 and 12 is where you've really seen it, like, just like it manifested. It's just blown up. And what you're seeing today is a direct product of what happened in the Defense Act in 2011 to 2012. Let's not forget what happened after 2001. Within weeks, they had the Patriot Act, which allowed spying on American citizens in the name of terrorism. So if you think the Democrats are the bad people or the Republicans are the bad people, I'm going to tell you right now for the last numerous decades that the Republicans and Democrats have been working together to really corrupt this country and take your constitutional rights and your God-given freedoms away from you every single day with every single piece of legislation that they sign. That is the facts, ladies and gentlemen. Okay, my rant is done.
I agree with you. I agree with you, Jeremy. And the thing is I think the time is now. You know, a lot of people don't know everything that, you know, our security at the convoy went through, and you know we had threats. You know, there were people saying they were going to come shoot us up. People saying that they were going to bomb us. And the first person that would jump up and say, "Okay, let's figure this out," was Sam Doolin. Every single time, Sam Doolin would put his life on the line for people he didn't even know to keep you safe. And now Sam is facing 56 years in jail. It's time for us to show him the same favor and courtesy that he showed us in the convoy and to have his back. It's time to go to his trial, fill the courtroom, show the judge, show the jury that he has people that have his back that know his true character. And that's why we need everyone to show up in Bartow in December for his trial and show this county that they are in the wrong for going after this family and going after Sam. And I'll go as far as saying that a lot of you owe him this. And I hope all of you will be there. I hope that, you know, a lot of the leads that I've reached out to, a lot of you are on board, a lot of you are still on the fence, but it's time to get off the fence, because what are you going to do when they come after you? When are you going to stand up and fight for each other and stop looking out for just yourself? It's time to stand together with Sam.
I agree. And listening to you guys, it made me think of a few things. The host of this was talking about the J6ers stopping Congress. And if you look, there is quite a few of them being charged with obstruction of Congress. And they're saying, well, it's a 20-year charge. But let's just contrast this. I can't remember the gentleman's name, but he's a father of a Parkland shooting survivor that went into a congressional hearing, blew past the police, flung open the door, Congress had to go into recess. They arrested him there, but they only gave him a little ticket and let him go. How come he's not being charged with obstruction of Congress?
Because this is political persecution on all levels. This is to show the American people, don't you ever dare stand up against the federal government ever again, or we will throw you in the gulags. We will beat the living hell out of you until you are so uncomfortable. We will persecute your family. We will come in the middle of the night, in the early morning, flashbang your houses like what happened to Frank and his family and Ben and his family. We will arrest your sons, your nephews, your nieces, your cousins, your brothers, your aunts, your uncles, and we will throw them away, and we will throw bullshit charges on them for as long as we can, just to hold them there to show the American people that you don't mess with us. This is gang mentality. This is what the mob did, besides breaking out your kneecaps. Of course, they did that to a lot of the J6 defendants that were put in a gulag. They treated them like garbage. They treated them worse than they treated anybody that was put in Gitmo. They treated them worse than they treated terrorists that actually like bombed our capital. And let me, on a side note here, we only got 15 minutes left, but I want to say this. Susan Rosenberg. If you don't know that name, look it up. I've said it a million times, and I'll say it a million more because sometimes some of you don't hear my broadcasts. But in the early 80s, Susan Rosenberg was convicted of bombing the United States Capitol. Literally, she was tied together with a far-left group called M-19s, I believe it was. They were accused of killing armed guards and robbing armored trucks. She actually bombed the United States Capitol in the early 80s, convicted of it, and she was pardoned on Bill Clinton's last day of office. She went on to be the vice chair of Thousand Currents. Thousand Currents was in charge of the financials or taking donations for none other than Black Lives Matter. Now, if you cannot connect the dots and or connect the, you know, connect the dots and dot the I's and cross the T's and all that good stuff, that means you haven't been paying attention. Do guys like me pay attention? This is all connected. The fact that scumbag Antifa BLM John Sullivan crackpot was right there filming the death of Ashley Babbitt makes me sick to my stomach. Rosanna Boylan was killed, and they just drug her body like she was some kind of mannequin.
Have you watched
and,
the video
and the rest
that?
Of them. Oh, yeah.
Have you
oh,
watched
yeah.
the video of her death where she's face down, unconscious, not moving, and they're still hitting her in
yeah,
the
oh,
back
yeah.
of the head?
Yeah, oh, yeah. I've
but
watched
no
it all.
There. No
and you know
there.
Why nobody else knows about it? Because mainstream media is in on it. I don't care what
yeah.
you what you say or what you think or what your opinion is. I've seen enough through a million different BLM riots in the summer of 2020. They were mostly peaceful. Now, I'm not trying to get off on a different subject here. I want you to understand the big picture here. BLM riots were mostly peaceful. While they're burning and causing billions of dollars of damage in Minneapolis. And now, if you haven't heard about this, there's actually a court case in Hennepin County right now, as we speak, where court documents were released from the what do they call the guy that looks at the body, the coroner, the Hennepin County coroner. Excuse me, I got so many things in my mind I got to get out. But the Hennepin County coroner, in court documents, stated that he did not die of asphyxia. He died from a drug overdose from fentanyl. George Floyd did. So, by the way, Derek Chauvin is in the process of appealing his case because of that document. So everything you're being told by the media is nothing but a narrative and a lie, ladies and gentlemen, including J6, including wars, including everything you know that you've oh, – I've seen it on the news. The news is nothing but a propaganda machine for the crooked government that is enforcing their authoritarian laws or their authoritarian authority, whatever you want to call it, onto the people and taking away your God-given and your constitutional rights as we speak, and it will get worse if you don't stand up together. Democrat, Republican, no matter who you are, you need to stand up together. I'm not talking about going in guns a-blazing. I'm talking about standing up peacefully and protesting peacefully according to your First Amendment rights, where you can peacefully assemble. I've done it many a times, and I've never caused anybody harm, and I've never ever prevented anybody from going about their daily business, because there's a lot of people in this country that don't care about what your cause is. They just want to live their life. And honestly, that's all we want to live is our life. But we are being interfered with by a corrupt federal government that our forefathers stood up against in 1776 and were overtaken again in 1876, in my opinion.
Yeah.
But if you want things
yeah,
to change and you want to see things change fast, you peacefully stand up together in mass numbers, and I promise you, ladies and gentlemen, you will see a change in this country that you haven't seen in 200 years. You will see peace that you have never even imagined. Black, white, Hispanic, Chinese, doesn't matter what ethnicity you are. If we stood up together, they would have no other choice but to say,
oh, we got to back down right now. That's all it takes, ladies and gentlemen. Stand up for what's right, not for what the media tells you to stand up for. And these people on this phone tonight know what's right. Now, another, my second rant of the night, which I'll come within like 10 minutes. Pretty awesome. we have 9 minutes left. So, caller, I'm going to give you another a minute and a half to make your final thoughts, because I have to get to these other two before we our broadcast ends, whether I like it or not. So go ahead and make your final thoughts. Caller.
I was just thinking about civil asset forfeitures. I don't know if you've ever heard of these things before, where the federal government's made a law that your local police can just seize property from you, seize cash from you, without even proving that you've committed a crime. So they do it civilly. Then they go and get a warrant after they've taken your money from them, from you. Then they send it to the federal government. The federal government sends 80% back. So your federal government has incentivized your local police to steal from you. And then these police will say, well, we're just doing our jobs. And I'm like, that's the scariest thing. That makes me feel very unsafe, because you know who else was just doing their jobs and just following orders? Was all that the police down in Uvalde, Texas. They were told not to act, so they just sat and watched children die. So those same people, they weren't afraid to use violence because they had no problems beating up the parents that just wanted to go do the job of the police and save their own kids. When they're told, go get everybody with glasses, go get everybody that's got a blue shirt, whatever it is, they're going to do it. They're just following orders. They're just doing their job. They don't actually hold to their oath. And that's why I say I love the idea of law enforcement, but it's not what we have anymore.
No, I agree. But I think, listen, I have your phone number here. Would you like me to text you for part two of this?
Yeah, that's fine.
Okay. I have your phone number. I'll keep it here. But thank you for calling in and sharing your thoughts, because it was very insightful, and I appreciate it, and we'll talk to you soon. Thank you.
All right. Appreciate you too.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, we're going to hang up with him. Always appreciate callers, because it brings another perspective and another insight. So without me blabbing too much longer, Frank, I'm going to go to you for a two-minute final thoughts, and I'm pretty much sure that we'll do a part two to this, Frank, if you don't mind. Oh, Frank, you there? All right, Ross.
I might have lost him. I know he has service issues sometimes. I think I've said. Oh, is he there?
Yeah, I got it back. I'll let you finish it up, Ross. But I'm gonna believe it or not, that guy that called in, Tom's pretty unique. he's got a pretty unique January 6th story.
We'll have him on. We'll have him on in the second part of this for danger. So,
yeah, go ahead.
But Frank, thank you so much for your addition to this program tonight. And dude, I'm praying for Samuel. Samuel is he's a really good man. I met him. He's a really good man. So we'll pray for Samuel, and everybody listening, please pray for Samuel and Frank and for the whole family of the Doolins and the Pollocks, please.
Yeah, Doolin, Pollock, and the Perkins, there's some other friends of ours that he's being treated very badly. So,
absolutely.
Anyway, thank you.
Thank you, Frank.
Hey,
okay,
thanks,
Frank. Ross, we got 5 minutes left. Go ahead and share your final thoughts.
Yeah, no, I just, I hope this, reached everybody it needed to reach. And, you understand, who Sam is now. I know in the convoy, a lot of people, they accused him of stolen valor, which is completely uncalled for, and it should have never happened. And those people that did that, do something, for Sam. Write a letter to the judge, write a letter to Polk County Sheriffs, write a letter to the state AG. Just try to do something for him. You wronged him in the past. Let's just make it right. He deserves at least that. And, Jeremy, I appreciate you getting us all on here tonight. And, this family is way, well past getting their story out and everyone hearing what, you know, what actually happened on January 6th and what all the families are going through. You know, I haven't confirmed if there's any other families out there that they're going through the same thing, like what Sam has been set up and, you know, thrown into jail just to pressure, you know, pressure him into, you know, giving his family up. You know, and anybody else that is going through this, it's time to speak up and get your voices heard, because the American people deserve to know.
Absolutely. And Ross, thank you for contacting me so we could set this up. And I'm going to call you after this broadcast, if you don't mind.
Yeah, of course. Yes, sir.
Okay. Yeah, I'll call Ross after this. We're going to talk about episode number two of this, or part two, because I would like to get Ashley Babbitt's mom on here so you could hear her side and what this has done to her and how she's been persecuted just because she's the mother of Ashley Babbitt. When Ashley Babbitt was a war hero. I mean, she was a veteran and she was about to be deployed again. How this administration is treating our veterans is despicable. It's dishonorable. I'm not going to get too deep into this because I'll lose my temper, and I don't want to do that tonight because I think this was a great broadcast. I think everybody that was on here tonight, thank you so much for sharing your story. It's something that I've wanted to reach out to a lot of people. I just didn't have the means or the way to do that. Now I have, you know, numerous phone numbers, and I'm not scared of what heat this may bring on me for doing this broadcast, and I never have been, of what heat this may bring. I do know that through my experience, that the last place you want to go into is a hostile environment, which is Washington, D.C., when it's not constitutionalists, people that believe in the Constitution, that are presiding in the White House or in that fact, or in that matter, the Capitol. What we're seeing in this country right now is I never thought I'd see it in my lifetime. Let's just put it that way. But to end this broadcast with 2 minutes left, thank you all for listening, and thank every one of you that were on here tonight, shared your stories and your thoughts and your opinions. And again, Ross, I appreciate you, brother, and I'll call you here shortly. Please, ladies and gentlemen, from one patriot to another, whether you're a Democrat, Republican, Independent, Libertarian, or whatever you belong to, we need to stand together peacefully. And just tell the government we've had enough, because we have. I know a lot of people are oblivious to what's going on because they watch mainstream media, but I'm here to tell you that the mainstream media is your enemy also. With that being said, I pray for our FBI, I pray for our CIA, our ATF, and every federal government agency that they see God's way and that they see the light. And I pray for Samuel, and I pray for Ben's two kids, son and a daughter. In Jesus' name, I pray for all of you, everyone, all of you, that we find peace in this country once again. Have a great night, everybody. God bless each and every one of you, and we'll talk to you soon.